and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
They don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here today on the big program. Bill Teeter, a pharmacist with Express Script Incorporated, one of these companies who have decided that, you know what, we've made $500 million profit this year. I think it's a good time to go after our workers and stick it to them. Take some wages away, cut their benefits, cut their pensions, make them work longer, harder, for more time, for less money. That's a good American corporate, position to take right now. They have made $500 million in the first half of this year. And they want wage concessions. They want to change the health care benefits. They want to go back and take some of the pension away. And I got to tell you, it's disgusting to me. And at some point, I think people are going to wake up to the fact that the only time we hear about these stories is when the workforce is unionized, when they have a contract, which I think is extremely important to remember, because I don't think I know of any in the CEO class without a contract. Yet, you, the working people, those of us who actually do the labor, yeah, you don't need a contract. Trust us. Yeah. Also here in the first hour, Terrence Heath from the Campaign for America's Future is going to be talking about the Republican obstructionism and what it's just done. It's going to cost about 240,000 people their jobs now. We'll talk a little bit about that. Also, the big rally tomorrow that we will be there. The Rick Smith Show is going to be there in force with our little recorder, getting opinions, thoughts. So we will be live on our Sunday program. Make sure you tune in for that. And we'll also talk about it next week. But before we get to all of that, the big news here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania is Linda Thompson, the mayor, has announced that she applied to the state for a determination of fiscal distress. What this basically means is now the city of Harrisburg will look to the state for help. Thompson said the move, if approved as expected by the Rendell administration, would help the city access credit needed to keep the municipality operational. And it would work to solve its long-term budget and debt issues. Look, the reason I bring this up, this is going to be happening all across the country. And I had an interesting conversation today with a guy who said, you know, he hopes that Republicans win in November. And I think he was being facetious, at least I hope he was. He said, I hope Tom Corbett wins as governor. I hope the Republicans take over Congress and they do what they say they're going to do, which is cut off all aid to the states, slash and burn the budgets, slash thousands of state jobs, and slash. Give the big business tax credits to, much like I've always said on this program, make people feel the pain and make them realize exactly what it is our government does. Because I think too often we don't know. And maybe by allowing them to slash and burn for a short term, maybe, just maybe, we'll wake up. going back to that old saying that I've said, Jake, 1,000 times, you know, sometimes your stomach has to be empty before your head gets right. And maybe out of that comes our ability to take this country back in the right direction instead of, you know, flipping the wheel around and heading down the wrong side of the road at 100 miles an hour the way it looks. It might happen.
Well, part of me, and I think that you probably feel the same way, part of you would like America to see exactly what would happen in this country if the Republicans and the conservative Republicans take control. The other part of me says, no, you got to step back from that emotionalism and look at the destruction. Is that what you want? I mean, at the end of the day, you don't want the Republicans to win as much as part of you would like to, because it would just be that much harder for the Democrats when they retake control.
Well, I'm even past the Democrat thing. I mean, some Democrats are our worst enemy.
Well, I'm saying the Democrats, because you either have right now Republicans or Democrats. I mean, I wouldn't have a problem being a Republican if the Republican voted for the working class. I would turn Republican tomorrow. It isn't a matter of party, but the truth is that there's a lot more Democrats that vote for the middle class than Republicans right now. And if anything, the Republicans are voting not only with corporate America, but they're voting to take away things that the middle class has enjoyed for decades.
And you know, what's interesting is Linda Thompson, the mayor here. One of the reasons she said that she has decided to move the state to this municipality's financial recovery is because there's no cooperation with the city council. And those are mostly Democrats. I mean, they can't, and you know, they just can't seem to get along. And maybe by having, you know, an adult step in, maybe by having the state step in and under Act 47, maybe we'll start to see them get their house in order.
Well, is that much different when she was the president of the city council? I mean,
no.
She certainly wasn't a friend of Mayor Reed. I mean, they fought tenaciously.
But the good thing about this under Act 47 is all the contracts for workers in the city would be honored until they ended. Mm-hmm. That's when they would get a little hairy. But if you go into a bankruptcy proceeding, they slash all that stuff right
then
now.
Then everything's on the table, and that's where the little guy gets hurt.
And what they're talking about, and again, you're going to hear this theme over and over again. And what bothers me is I think people are going to buy into a very short-term mentality.
Yep.
We're going to have to lease our city assets. We're going to lease the parking garage and other city assets, like they're doing in Pittsburgh right now, because Pittsburgh is also under Act 47. So there's this push to get this, I think they got $152 million, which if you really stop and think about it for a minute, this to me is absolutely amazing, that there is a private interest out there who is going to pay $152 million to lease these parking garages. What's interesting about it is they see that there's a profit to be made. And what they're going to do, you know, this is not rocket science. It's what happens. They're going to go to the bank. They're going to pull out a loan for 125% of the value of that. They're going to pay themselves back. They're going to raise the price of parking. They're going to raise the fees. They're going to raise all of that stuff. They're going to cut wages. They're going to go in and they're going to start trying to undercut all that. They're going to do as little maintenance and as little upkeep as possible. And then in 99 years, when the lease, like I think the one in Pittsburgh is 50 years, the one they're talking about here is 99. In 50 years, you're going to get a parking system back that is, well, 50 years old. Because they're not going to build new structures. They're not going to do the maintenance that needs to be done. They're going to do as little as possible so that they can suck as much money out of it. After all, it is a profit motive system. Simple. Why don't we see that? I mean, if there's money to be made, if we can, over the next 50 years, pull out $452 million in profit for a private company, plus pay them a profit every year because their shareholders are definitely going to want it. If we can do that with them, explain to me why we just can't do it ourselves, because it's our asset. And think about this as a good capitalist. really, stop and think about this. Your tax dollars built those garages. You and I built those garages. We have a vested interest in those garages. We have a stake in it. They're divesting our interests without us benefiting from it at all. In fact, what we're going to get is we're going to get stuck in the behind because we're going to be paying higher parking fees, and then we're going to get a big giant turd back.
Well, if I can interrupt, Rick, I mean, let's be honest. It's the easy thing. It's the easy thing to do.
It's the short-sighted thing.
It is short-sighted. It's the easy thing to do. And it staves off making the real tough decisions that inevitably, if this city's going to get on its feet, they're going to have to make.
And you go back to this thing with this Act 47. One of the big things that Act 47 allows them to do, and since this is a commuter city, it's going to give the city of Harrisburg the opportunity to tax workers who come into the city. So if you live in the outer reaches, they're going to be able to reach in under this Act 47 and tax people who work here. And I'm not quite sure how I feel about that, but it's going to give them a different avenue. Because you got to realize, people fled from this area. The only reason they come back are for the jobs. So there's a whole discussion to be had around that. On the state level, the other argument we're going to be hearing again and again, and it's a recurring theme, that we need to lease out or sell off the state stores. The liquor stores. And another really dumb thought, but you've got the conservatives, like the people over at the Tinky Tank, who are all in favor of it because there's money to be made. And there are, honestly and truthfully, donors to be had. The people who are pushing this are the people who see that, hey, if we could get a hold of that liquor store.
Well, you remember a couple years ago when they really made an onslaught on trying to privatize it. Do you remember who the benefactor was, the big benefactor? It was Rite Aid. They wanted the right to put liquor stores in their stores.
Of course. I mean, when I grew up in Cleveland, you could buy beer right from the gas station. You could buy one can of beer in the gas station. You could drive through a store. You could actually drive through the store and buy one single can of beer.
Well, the argument had always been, and I think it's particularly a fallacious argument. There might have been some truth to it 10, 15 years ago that the state stores don't really offer a variety. I mean, they have refined the system and gone out of their way, and you can find what you want to find in a state store.
That's ridiculous. What's angering is that there's no profit for private interests. That bottle of whatever it is you drink is the same price in Harrisburg as it is in Clearfield as it is in Pittsburgh. And every single penny that's taken in, the state gets their tax money. The taxpayers get their investment back. And those liquor stores throw about $300 million a year back into the general fund.
And you're paying a decent wage, which means that the people who hold the jobs are then, with a decent wage, putting that money back into the local economy. And the people that work there know that if they knowingly sell to an underaged individual, they lose their jobs.
That's right. And, you know, look at this. You know, as we go forward, and you're going to see a lot of this, not just here in Harrisburg, but across the country, especially if Republicans take over, you're going to see a lot of cities going belly up because the federal government did give a bunch of money to the states to keep them semi-solvent, to keep them from collapsing. What happens this November really is going to dictate what happens for the next 2 years in the states more than anything, because the states need the help. Like Pennsylvania and the fact that they can't borrow money. There's a problem there. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this. Your calls, 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Stick around.
It's not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Tens of thousands of people are marching in Washington, D.C. tomorrow in the One Nation March as workers and progressives fight for the changes working families desperately need. New York AFL-CIO Secretary Treasurer Terrence Melvin.
We will not step down. We will not step back. We will not retreat. Victory is ours. 10 to 10. 10 to 10. Will you join me? Will you join me? Will you make a difference?
In addition to the Washington March, the AFL-CIO says there will also be tens of thousands of union members going door-to-door October 2nd in 300 locations nationwide as part of a national political mobilization. This is the nation's largest grassroots political mobilization for the November 2nd elections. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka on why the Labor Federation is involved in the One Nation March.
It's time we lift our voices as one nation working together. People who are coming to Washington, D.C. to demand a renewed focus and investment in people. People like you who go to work every day and still don't seem to get ahead. People who want to work but don't have jobs to go to. One nation working together is demanding three things. 1 million new jobs, justice and equal protection under the law for all people, and world-class public education for all our children. We need Congress and other officials to hear us and then reinvest in people.
One U.S. Senate candidate doesn't know her state's minimum wage. Jesse Russell reports.
During a press conference where she accepted the endorsement of the National Federation of Independent Business, Connecticut's Republican senatorial candidate, Linda McMahon, couldn't remember the state's minimum wage. The minimum wage in Connecticut is $8.25 per hour, while a federal minimum wage is $7.25 per hour. The NFIB is against any increases to the federal minimum wage. McMahon said during the press conference that if she were elected, she wouldn't rule out possibly cutting the state's minimum wage. According to the Connecticut newspaper The Day, when McMahon was asked if she supported all of the organization's positions, her campaign abruptly shut down the press conference.
Workers who have lost their jobs and are in danger of having their homes foreclosed upon may receive some relief. J.P. Morgan Chase announced on Wednesday it would be halting upwards of 56,000 foreclosures because employees may have improperly filled out documents. The foreclosure suspensions will impact 23 states where foreclosures need to receive court approval. This announcement comes on the heels of an announcement last week by GMAC Mortgage that it would also suspend foreclosures and withdraw affidavits. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Demanding the super rich to pay their fair share for once. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. That's the number. You know, you look at this situation in Harrisburg, and again, Jake, you know, it's one of those things that makes you go, we got into a deep hole, but there's got to be a better way of getting out of it than sticking it to the people who actually go to work every day.
Beyond that, Harrisburg is an integral part of the state economy, and this area, along with Pennsylvania, has had their manufacturing and industrial base gouged out of it in the last two decades. And now the pigeons are coming home to roost, unfortunately.
Yep. Let's go to the phones. We got Irwin on line one. How are we doing today, Irwin?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you guys? Good to hear your voice, Rick and Jake.
Thanks so much, Irwin.
How goes the war?
Oh, we're right here on the front lines. You know, I'm looking at this situation with the city of Harrisburg, and I'm going, I see it going across the country, especially if things go south in November.
Well, it's a real legitimate fear, Rick. It's something that has been weighing heavily on my mind for quite a while now, and all of these basic municipal and state services are threatened, terribly threatened, to be parted out. And when they part them out, the people never get them back until the businessmen who take them over have crushed and destroyed them and wrung out every penny. And then like the municipal bus services or municipal mass transit services that used to be all privately owned all over the United States. They wrung them out, and then they dumped them on the communities and made the communities pay. And we face the same thing, whether it's for parking in Harrisburg and in Pittsburgh, where the same kind of thing is on the block, or this perennial one that you were just talking about a few moments ago, this idea that they would sell off the state stores. I view myself as a shareholder in a very successful business called the State Liquor Store.
Yep. And, you know, the same thing with the Turnpike. You know, they've been talking about leasing that out.
And, absolutely.
And again, another one of those assets that the state has that we invested in, my tax dollars went to build, and we're not going to get anything out of it.
Well, it's not only we're not going to get anything out of it, after putting up the money to build them and maintain them and develop them into these wonderful assets that are used by thousands of people every day, somebody else, some putative entrepreneur, is going to come take them over, charge me more to use what I bought in the first place, and put the money in their own pocket instead of using it for the public good. That $300 million you were talking about, the state liquor store system, puts into the economy in this state every year are $300 million fewer dollars of taxes that the rest of us have to pay.
Excellent point. Excellent point. And I think people need to understand that. I don't think that gets out enough. I think the message is well, the state has this, and what they've done a masterful job of doing is convincing people that the state's unable to run something like that.
Or that the state has no business doing it. You know, and the state has every business doing it. If we don't want underage kids being served alcohol, if we don't want these petty anti-robberies to take place, what better system can we have? When was the last time you heard about a state liquor store getting robbed? When was the last time you heard about a state liquor store employee being prosecuted for selling to underage drinkers?
When was the last time
you heard of a state liquor store employee ever selling anything to somebody who was inebriated? Doesn't happen.
I can't remember one.
Okay? I'm 59 years old. I can't remember one.
Well, it's an excellent point, and one that I think needs to be told over and over again to reinforce the fact that this is a very successful enterprise, and it should stay right where it is because, as you pointed out, $300 million in taxes I'm not going to have to pay that are going back into the coffers, providing the goods and services, especially the services that we as residents of this state had, one, come to expect, and two, absolutely deserve and need.
And I've worked in and around the wines and spirits industry for many years in my capacity as a lawyer. And the control is so wonderful that the owners of the distribution warehouses in Pennsylvania don't even have direct access to their own warehouses. They couldn't give you a bottle of wine or whiskey if they wanted to, other than by going to a state store themselves, buying it, and presenting you with a gift, because these things are so properly and appropriately protected. And when that protection takes place, it takes place to protect our children and our community.
Let me ask you this, Erwin, to kind of change gears a little bit. You know, I'm looking at this thing with Linda Thompson today, putting the city, asking the city to be under Act 47.
Yes.
Is this the most appropriate move, do you think?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't know enough about it to say with any certainty. I know that Act 47 has a whole lot of dangers for the residents of the city and for the employees, the municipal employees, the dedicated municipal employees, the firefighters, the police who protect us and provide us services, the first responders. But I know that Act 47 is less onerous and less troublesome and much more conducive to a future than a bankruptcy would be. Right. Where I'd have creditors committees and investment banker bond dealers, the people who brought us all the other wonderful things that Wall Street has given us in the last couple of years, being a creditors committee that runs the city under a bankruptcy. So as between those two alternatives, Act 47 seems to be the best, but there may be other alternatives as well. I certainly can be sure that parting out the city of Harrisburg, selling off firehouses, selling off parking meters, selling off City Island, doesn't seem to me to be the way to ensure the future of this community, to ensure that the children who live here get educated, to ensure that the people who work here are certain that the streets will be cleaned in the winter and that the streets will be safe 12 months a year.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I look at the mayor and the city council, and I said there was just no way they were ever going to work together. So an adult had to come into the room. At least that's my opinion. An adult had to come into the room to straighten that out.
Well, the problem is that we're faced with alternative adults in some respects. I think you're quite right that we need an adult coming into the room. But if the state comes in under Act 47, it's an adult that has a predisposition toward protecting the community, protecting the municipality. If the creditors come in and they're running it as a creditors committee in a bankruptcy, their interest is in protecting their checkbooks and maybe even enhancing them.
Yeah, good point. Excellent point. I'm going to look more into this, and because this is going to be an ongoing thing, an ongoing story, because I do believe if the Republicans take over here in November, we're going to see a lot more of this. So it's one of these things. We better examine this one because there are going to be a bunch more falling in the line as the months and next 2 years pass us by.
I think you're quite right, and I think that, you know, particularly so when we have people like Tom Corbett who at least say no taxes. Well, if you say no taxes and municipalities need help and they can't turn to the state, the only thing the state's going to tax is workers' paychecks to finance their unemployment compensation debt, because that apparently isn't a tax, that's a contribution, according to what I read in the paper today.
Yep.
Then where do municipalities turn? Their only alternative is to raise taxes or to sell off assets or both.
Right.
Well, Harrisburg has a limit on how much it can raise taxes because so much of the value of the real property in Harrisburg, one of the major sources of tax revenue, is not taxable. It's owned by the state. State gets fire protection just like everybody else in the city, but the state really pays next to nothing for it. It's a paltry $400,000 contribution to the city as kind of a gift, as it were, for fire and police protection. But that's the same that they paid 20 years ago. Same number, not even the same percentage.
So it'll be interesting to see how this flushes itself out because, again, I think it's going to be something a reoccurring theme that we see quite often, Irwin. I appreciate the call. I got to take a break right here.
Go, go, go. Thanks. Good to hear from you.
Always great. Thanks so
much.
Thanks,
Irwin.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
You know, you look at this, and I got to be honest, Jake, scary stuff.
Well, it is. What he was talking about with the firefighters very quickly. You know, Representative Buxton, if it wasn't for him pushing the legislature to come up $50,000, they would have been $50,000 short because they there for a while was a shortfall. And, wow. I mean, and not to reimburse the city for that kind of service is just...
Well, again, you know...
That's bad news under these circumstances.
Again, I think this is going to be something we're going to see, especially if November goes towards the Republicans, towards the conservative end of things. The no tax people. Oh, no taxes. Yeah, no taxes. Because we don't need, like you said, we don't need firemen or policemen or any of that stuff. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back with Terrence Heath from the Campaign for America's Future. Stick around. We're right back after this.
Me. I ain't never been on welfare, and that's one place I won't be. I'll be working as long as my two hands are fit to use. I'll drink my beer in a tavern, sing a little bit of these working men.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
On December 28, 1970, President Richard Nixon signed the Occupational Safety and Health Act into law. Thanks to strong lobbying efforts by union leaders over many years, this safety bill of rights established for the first time a comprehensive national policy to protect workers' health and safety. Effective April 28, 1971, employers were required to provide a workplace free of known hazards that caused or were likely to cause serious physical injury or death. Prior to the passage of OSHA, work-related injuries and deaths were extremely high. The 1920s saw reports of 20,000 workers killed on the job and more than 2.5 million injured per year. That number remained until the 1960s when work-related deaths dropped to 14,000 per year, but injuries increased by 20%. Today, thanks to OSHA, protections on-the-job injuries have fallen 40% and on-the-job deaths have been reduced by 60% pre-OSHA. OSHA is considered the first piece of legislation allowing the government to inspect and hold employers accountable for dangerous and physically harmful working conditions. OSHA has three branches, an enforcement branch, a research branch, and a review branch. Since its passage, OSHA has allowed for greater visibility and oversight in conditions on the job, prioritizing efforts to prevent accidents, control health hazards, and ensure workers go home as safe and as healthy as when they arrived on the job. While OSHA is a step in the right direction, there is still considerable work to be done, and only through the eyes and voices of working people with the help of their unions will tomorrow be a safer day. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well?
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
Well, you know, we got a little glimpse of what the future holds for us. If November goes the way the pundits are saying, into the hands of the Grand Obstructionist Party, if it goes that way, for all their talk about creating jobs, the conservatives in Congress right now have just fired 240,000 American workers. See ya. Where's the compassionate conservatism we were told of? Where's that at? By their stalling, delaying, obstruction, and their gridlock, they have now added another 240,000 American workers to the ranks of the unemployed. You remember those people that they were so, you know, we got to get people back to work. Obama's killing jobs. Well, they just cost us 240,000 more. Terrence Heath is here to talk to us a little bit about that. He works over at the Campaign for America's Future. Ourfuture.org is the website. Terrence, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
You know, 240,000 jobs, poof, gone.
Yeah, and that's actually more jobs than were added to the economy during the entire Bush administration. So you have a Republican president and Congress that couldn't create as many jobs in nearly 8 years as this program created in the short time that it existed.
Now, explain what the program was, if you would.
Well, it was a program that was actually an emergency fund added to an existing program, and basically it allowed state and local governments and nonprofit organizations to get funding to hire people who were unemployed to do work that needed to be done, that they didn't have necessarily money to hire people to do. These were people who were literally in need and getting jobs, helping other people in their communities who were in need. We're talking about job training, we're talking about helping parents who have been unemployed get work. We're talking about community organizers, empowering communities that are economically disadvantaged to advocate for themselves. We're talking about helping single parents who otherwise would not be able to afford child support to, well, not single parents, excuse me, non-custodial parents, who would not otherwise be able to afford child support to do so. It's mind-boggling.
Well, it is mind-boggling, but here's the thing. It falls under, it's the emergency fund under the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families thing,
yeah.
The TANF.
Yeah.
Now, the first thing that comes to my mind is when I hear TANF, when I think like when right-wing Rick comes out, he thinks, well, that's those people, them over there.
Right.
Those others, that's them. And, you know, here's the problem. When I look at the Republican Party, it's all about harming them.
Exactly. And about helping whom? About helping someone like Ben Stein, for example, avoid a tax increase, which would for him be about the cost of a bag of groceries, essentially.
Yep.
And that's what it comes down to, is that, A, this program helped the quote-unquote wrong people and helped people do work that these Republicans in Congress and in the Senate don't think needs to be done.
And you know, the thing that gets me about this is, to me, this would be exactly the kind of program I think Republicans could get in line with. Getting people back to work, getting them
paying. Some Republicans did get in line with it. It was praised by no less than Haley Barbour, governor of Mississippi. I don't know how much more Republican you can get than that. And he said himself that this was a stimulus program that a Republican could love. Maybe a Republican governor who's looking at bigger unemployment rolls, but not Republicans in the Senate whose main concern is taking back power so that they can do exactly what they did in this case, which is nothing.
You see, this is the kind of stuff that I said right from the beginning we should have been doing. You need to get people employed because there's a therapeutic quality to work.
The only thing that you could say negatively about TANF was that it wasn't big enough.
Again,
it showed exactly what was needed and exactly what could be done.
So now what's going to happen in the coming days? Is this now dead, or are we going to see someone try and breathe life back into it?
You know, someone may try and breathe life back into it, but right now, as it stands now, these people, some of them have already been, you know, have probably already been let go. There are also employers who, since the middle of this year, have been watching Congress, states, and employers, private sector employers, who were looking to access this program, who stopped hire people that weren't going to be with them when Congress potentially let the program die, when the Republicans in Congress let the program die. So they've actually not only killed 240,000 jobs, but have been undermining job growth for the better part of the year, essentially. There are some states and local governments that are going to try and replace the funding that they have been getting from TANF. But state and local governments have been strapped for the last couple of years.
Well, they're going to be strapped even more because now they're going to have to pay unemployment compensation.
Exactly.
And it's going to be one of these things that falls onto the back of the state, that the federal government's not going to renew this program.
Right.
And the states are going to get stuck with it.
Right. And I can guarantee you that if the Republicans take over, if conservatives take over Congress in November, they're probably going to vote not to extend unemployment benefits for the very people that they fired just now.
I can guarantee they're not going to extend unemployment benefits. You got Joe Miller out there in Alaska saying he thinks it's unconstitutional.
And when asked what he would do for these people then otherwise, he had no answer. And that's because their answer is nothing.
Well, that's the whole Tea Party thing. It's all about anger. It's all about destroy the government. But when you go, okay, let's destroy the government, then what? There's no answer. The only answer I've ever gotten was liberty, freedom. And I go, those are nice concepts, but.
Yeah. The thing is that there's a concept that's missing in that line of thought, and that is the notion that, hey, if my neighbor's house is on fire, I want it put out because you know, it's going to spark my roof too. And it's the same concept that what happens across the street or across town or across the country impacts everyone.
See, now I think you've lost the whole Tea Party right there.
That
concept is completely foreign to them, that something across the street could affect them.
Well, you're dealing with people who also are deluded enough to think that they are John Galt. You know? That if they throw up their hands and say, to hell with everything, that they're going to be missed either. And it's not the case. We're all in this together.
If I go down, we all go down.
I guarantee you that, you know, other people are going to get dragged down with me, because if I don't have income, if I don't have even unemployment benefits, then I'm not spending money. I'm not, you know, buying groceries. I'm not going to all the different places that I might spend money in the community. I'm not buying goods and services.
Well, get to the end of the road with this, and I may be the guy sticking a gun in your face to feed my kids.
Right. And I'm not an economist, so I could be completely in the dark here, but I keep thinking that increasing demand for goods and services is a good thing.
I'm absolutely with it.
This program did. There were people who were getting paychecks and spending them right in their community, who won't do that anymore because they won't have it.
And the next part of this, Terrence, is that then they're going to be looking to the state. They're going to be looking to the local charities for food, for heating, for all of the things that we've decided as a society we're going to help people with. It's going to fall back onto the local and state governments that already don't have money, that are going to end up,
right,
that are just like here in Harrisburg, broke.
And it's not there. And my message really to people is, I am one of those progressives who has been screaming for the last year or 2 years that so much more needs to be done. TANF was an example of what was possible and what we needed more of. I can guarantee you we won't get it if the conservatives take over in November.
Which is why we can't allow that to happen. And that's why people need to take to the streets. And tomorrow is the big 10-2-10 rally in Washington. We are going to be there. We're going to be going down with a bus of our union brothers and sisters to show our support. And I'm hoping, and you know, maybe you can help us out with this. I'm hoping that there'll be somebody at the gate, like kind of a spell checker. Because, you know, I look at Becca Palooza, and I look at some of the other Tea Twizzler rallies. They're illogical signs and the horrible misspellings. You know, my favorite being the guy standing there with a sign saying no pubic option. He's kind of an abstinence only guy, but didn't know it.
I'm hoping that we won't have any of that. I'm hoping that we'll have people turn out and speak for real American values, the values that you and I and millions of other people across the country share, values that say, you know what, let's spend $500 million to keep 240,000 people working for 3 months, rather than extend tax cuts that have already cost us $2.3
trillion. But, you know, here's the thing. Warren Buffett needs a little extra cheese on his Whopper.
Right.
I mean, you know, that's just what it is. You know, you got to have a little extra.
But the thing is, the rich do not spend. Moody's has studied this, and other people have studied this and put out reports about the reality that rich people do not spend tax cuts. They save them.
Of course they do.
Away into the bank or invest it in the next exotic financial instrument that's going to make them money on the interest without employing anyone beyond Wall Street's hedge funds.
Yep, and it lets them sit on their yachts and sip margaritas while paying 15% flat tax, and the rest of us who go to work and bust our behinds and break our bodies down, we're the ones who end up paying more of the tax.
But there are people in your community and my community that if they are put to work, they want to work. We're talking about people who I have listened to the stories of some of these people. I wrote about it earlier today, and the refrain was, I have worked all my life. I have worked all my life, and then I got fired from this job that I had for 10 years, 17 years, for 12 years. I want to work. I want to work. And I remember very poignantly one man who had lost his job and struggled to find a job and finally got something through TANF and was working again.
And now we've just booted him to the curb again.
Right. And the reality is those people in your community and my community, if you put them back to work, they will take that money that we've invested in them and put it back into the economy.
And that's what we need. That's what we need right now.
Keep, I don't even know how many other people working. And eventually, that job growth, that job security, that stability can increase job growth into the private sector. A lot of the jobs that, you know, I've read at least one opinion that if TANF had continued, it would have created a lot more jobs. And most of those jobs would have been in the private sector, exactly the kind of job growth that conservatives say they want.
But again, if you go back to the very beginning of the Obama administration, they said from the beginning they were going to stand in opposition to whatever he did because, as Limbaugh said, we want him to fail.
Exactly. And that means we want to add more people to the unemployment roll. That means we want to add more people to the nearly 44 million Americans who are living in poverty, people who were working, had been working until this economic downturn, brought to us by the same people that just killed 240,000 jobs, snatched theirs away too.
Yep. And in November for me is about, are we going to go back to the Reagan-Bush policies, or are we going to continue on what is a somewhat a sane course? Now, we can argue that what Obama has done is not enough, and I will be on the front of that saying, I don't think he's done enough. I think things should have been bigger. I think he should have been more forceful, should have exerted more leadership, but we're still moving in the right direction.
Will be undone.
Exactly. And that's what they're running on. Exactly. We're going to undo it all.
Exactly.
Oh,
John Boehner's presented his two-step job creation program that is really a short walk off, or a long walk off a short economic pier.
Yep.
Cut the budget back to 2008 and extend the Bush tax cut.
And, of course, repeal the health care.
Right. And so, where exactly does that leave us?
That leaves us worse off than we were.
Worse off than we were before, and with less, far less of a chance of climbing out of this hole that we're all in.
Well, really what it's about is creating a desperation class, and
they've done
a very good job of that.
Exactly.
You've got people who are extremely desperate. And all across the country, what we're seeing employers going after their employees, cutting their wages, cutting their benefits, doing away
with
pensions, doing away with health care, and the only people that we hear of are the union people who are saying, no, we're not going to take it anymore.
Exactly.
That's pretty much it in a nutshell. The piece is conservatives just killed 240,000 jobs by Terrence Heath. You can get that over at ourfuture.org, or we're going to put a link to our site at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Terrence's name. It'll take you over there. Terrence, I appreciate your time. Great piece here. I hope everybody goes over and takes a look at it. And I look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Thank you.
Alrighty, we're gonna take a quick break here. We're right back after this. Stick around.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
Some politicians say the unemployed won't look for work until their benefits run out.
Ed has been laid off from his pipe fitting job for over 18 months.
I'm here to tell you, being out of work is no fun. It sets you back in life. Benefits provide for less than half your wages. There's no health care, and your family suffers. To those politicians who think anybody would rather be collecting unemployment than working, I say come join us. We won't forget on Election Day.
This Labor Day message brought to you by the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO, Richard Bloomingdale President, Frank Snyder, Secretary Treasurer.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
learned something today. Tom Corbett on Monday said that in order to fix the $3 billion shortfall in unemployment compensation, the state of Pennsylvania borrowed $3 billion to plug that hole so that workers in this state would get the unemployment compensation that they paid for. It's theirs. They paid into it. It's definitely something they deserve and are entitled to, and it's really has saved us from economic collapse. But what I learned is that Tom Corbett did not break his big pledge, didn't break his tax pledge at all. And I'll tell you why. Tom doesn't believe that unemployment tax is a tax. He thinks it's a contribution. You see, it's not a tax. It's a contribution. Isn't that great? So what I think we should do, we should ask the very wealthy in the country for a contribution. Maybe if we could get them to contribute more, we don't want to tax them. No more taxes. No taxes. We're just going to ask for contributions. I like that. Let's go to the phone lines. I got Mike on line one. How are we doing today, Mike?
Pretty good, Rick. Mr. Corbett is starting to cause some unrest among state employees.
I bet.
And that unrest is taking the form of, well, if he's so certain he's not going to raise taxes, and we know that the pension fund needs 30% a year more starting in 2011, 2012. To make up for the 20 years the state didn't meet its responsibilities and contribute, lots of people are starting to be concerned about solvency of the retirement fund with his pledge of no new taxes.
Yep.
And if he's elected, there may be a mass rush for the door.
Well, if things go the way I think they have to go under his no tax pledge, I think he's going to slash and burn the whole government. And there'll be nothing. He'll be standing there by himself.
I don't think he's going to have time to slash and burn.
Well, that's a good point.
I think what's going to happen is that people are going to want their contribution because they're going to become afraid that they won't be able to get their money out, so they won't have anything, and everybody's headed for the door.
Yeah, they're going to take their pension and run. And I don't blame
them. That's right.
I wouldn't blame
them. That's right. And what they're going to find is that in very short order, they're going to lose people that they can't replace.
Well, I mean,
they're going to lose scientists, engineers, computer specialists, and they're going to lose them in droves.
Well, as you've said before, we're losing them now, and we're not replacing the ones we are losing, because who wants to work in this environment? Who wants to have a target painted on their back?
Well, and you know, that was how the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania attracted employees for a long time. They said, you're not going to make as much money as you would make in the private sector, but you're going to have a lot more stability, and you're going to have good benefits, and you can look forward to a good retirement. Okay? Basically, what they were saying is, we'll make it up to you in the end. And now they're saying, we're going to give it to you in the end.
Yeah, you're going to get it in the end, all right.
That's right. And so Mr. Corbett gets elected on Inauguration Day. He may have a hard time finding people to do things for him, like direct traffic and whatever.
Well, this is one of the things that I was going to talk about today. Yesterday we talked about the people who go in and inspect swimming pools. In fact, I got a couple of emails on it. That now there's nobody. And I remember I had a girlfriend back when I was in high school. Her father went to one of these fitness clubs, and they screwed up the chemical mix, and he ended up burning his lungs.
Mm-hmm.
And he couldn't work again. He was done. He ended up having to get a lawyer, and it was a long, drawn-out process. They almost lost their house. But that's a whole long story. But that could happen to any one of us.
Well, and you know, I love the way they said, well, this group is gonna make up for that loss of those people. And I said, oh, so you're telling me that these people that were going to make it up weren't working a full-time job before? No, what they're saying is now, we're going to squeeze somebody into doing this in addition to the job they did before. Oh, but we don't want to give them any overtime. We want them to do this under the table.
So we're basically making, you're going to make the state government operate like Walmart, is what you're telling me.
Yeah, that's what it's going to be. That's exactly. Good point, Rick. State government's going to become Walmart.
Beautiful. That's what I want. I want to walk into a state government office and find somebody with a glassy look on their face who really doesn't care and who's going to basically be there because they're making minimum wage. Nice. That's what I want. Mission accomplished. That's mission accomplished as far as I'm concerned.
Wait till they start calling, people start calling state offices to report that the oil drillers or the gas drillers are pumping stuff into the stream, and they get a recorded message that says, you are number 9,214. Please leave your message now.
Well, that's it's interesting you bring that up. I met a guy yesterday who said he had called the police, and they told him that they weren't going to come out because he had driven into a puddle. His car had stalled, and they said, that's not our deal. As long as you're not drowning, good luck to you, buddy.
And they're right. That really is what they do, and that's the way it is. And what a lot of people don't realize, there have been several Supreme Court rulings that have said the police are under no obligation to respond to any particular call.
See, now I've never heard that one.
Oh yeah, I mean it was a very famous case that came out of California where a woman called the police because she had an intruder, and she was subsequently raped and murdered, and her family sued, and the Supreme Court ruled in the final analysis that the police are not required to respond to any particular call. They are under no obligation.
Wow. I'm going to have to check that out myself. That's something. That's amazing.
Check it out. That is the rule.
I don't doubt you. I'm just saying that's just amazing to me.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing stuff. But last question, the last thing I got for you. You know, going back to the state pensions, because I think it's an important point for people to hear. As a state worker, you pay in every penny into your pension that you were required to pay into. It was the state, under my understanding, that was the one that decided for about 10 or 15 years they weren't going to make their contributions.
19 years they did not make their contribution.
And we wonder why we're in the trouble we're in now.
That's right. And the reason was, here's the beauty of this. The reason was, as the legislators looked at the money coming in at the time on the investment of the pension fund, Pennsylvania has one of the best pension funds in the country. It has the highest yield. It's in the top 5%. And they said, look, we don't have to put any money in here. We can take this money and divert it to other things, and we'll be heroes.
Because we won't have to raise taxes.
Right.
Yep.
Exactly.
Beautiful. The beauty of politics, Mike. I appreciate the call, buddy.
All right.
Thanks so much. You know, it's one of those things that you go, we got ourselves into this mess by electing these people who, A, hate government. That always amazed me that someone is going to tell you, I don't believe in government. I don't think it can do anything right. Vote for me. How does that work?
Yeah, but it's even more beautiful. They campaign on less government and no new taxes, and their answer to everything is a tax cut, a tax break.
Look, if tax cuts were the answer, the Bush years would be the most memorable in history.
We'd be swimming in prosperity.
Right. Every one of us would have a yacht and a maid.
Oh, the jobs would be falling from heaven.
We'd all have Mexicans.
There you go.
I mean, we'd all be prosperous. And the teabaggers would be welcoming immigrants with open arms. Open arms, I'm telling you.
I don't know about you, but high-paying jobs just fell from the sky on me. Now, maybe they did on you, Rick, but not. I must have missed that one.
No, I'm right there with the rest of us, man. You pay your bills. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith. The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to Win Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Tens of thousands of people are marching in Washington, D.C. tomorrow in the One Nation March as workers and progressives fight for the changes working families desperately need. New York AFL-CIO Secretary Treasurer Terrence Melvin.
We will not step down. We will not step back. We will not retreat. Victory is ours. 10 to 10. 10 to 10. Will you join me? Will you join me? You make a difference.
In addition to the Washington March, the AFL-CIO says there will also be tens of thousands of union members going door-to-door October 2nd in 300 locations nationwide as part of a national political mobilization. This is the nation's largest grassroots political mobilization for the November 2nd elections. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka on why the Labor Federation is involved in the One Nation March.
It's time we lift our voices as one nation working together. People who are coming to Washington, D.C. to demand a renewed focus and investment in people. People like you who go to work every day and still don't seem to get ahead. People who want to work but don't have jobs to go to. One Nation Working Together is demanding three things. 1 million new jobs, justice and equal protection under the law for all people, and world-class public education for all our children. We need Congress and other officials to hear us and then reinvest in people.
One U.S. Senate candidate doesn't know her state's minimum wage. Jesse Russell reports.
During a press conference where she accepted the endorsement of the National Federation of Independent Business, Connecticut's Republican senatorial candidate, Linda McMahon, couldn't remember the state's minimum wage. The minimum wage in Connecticut is $8.25 per hour, while a federal minimum wage is $7.25 per hour. The NFIB is against any increases to the federal minimum wage. McMahon said during the press conference that if she were elected, she wouldn't rule out possibly cutting the state's minimum wage. According to the Connecticut newspaper of the day, when McMahon was asked if she supported all of the organization's positions, her campaign abruptly shut down the press conference.
Workers who have lost their jobs and are in danger of having their homes foreclosed upon may receive some relief. J.P. Morgan Chase announced on Wednesday it would be halting upwards of 56,000 foreclosures because employees may have improperly filled out documents. The foreclosure suspensions will impact 23 states where foreclosures need to receive court approval. This announcement comes on the heels of an announcement last week by GMAC Mortgage that it would also suspend foreclosures and withdraw affidavits. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Hello, I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME, Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. A union of over 1.4 million strong and growing, AFSCME is gaining improvements in the workplace all across America. And right here in the Commonwealth, more than 95,000 AFSCME members make Pennsylvania happen. Highways, libraries, hospitals, parks, offices, prisons, classrooms, museums, courtrooms. You'll find AFSCME members at work in all these places and many more.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
Today's AFSCME members take on public service jobs as diverse as they are, not for the recognition, but for a better Pennsylvania. For more information, please visit our website at AFSCME13.org. Labor is changing. So is your labor union. We are AFSCME.
Don't you know, we're talking about a revolution, sounds like a whisper. Don't you know,
together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show. Progressive talk with a conscience.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. I want to go back to this thing with Corbett, because Monday, right after it happened here on the program, we had Scott Conklin here in the studio, and we were talking about this. And I said, look, what frustrates me and what concerns me the most about this guy, about Tom Corbett, is the fact that his first reaction, his gut reaction, his visceral reaction was to taxing the workers, was to going after them first and foremost, because he said he wasn't in favor of a business tax. So his first response was, we need to tax the paychecks. Higher employee payroll taxes, right? And then we need to cut their checks. So pay higher for less of getting in your check. That's his gut reaction. And now this lame excuse, this after the fact, I forgot the TV cameras were on. I thought I was just talking to the chamber, man. Because you got to wonder what he's been promising them. You got to wonder what kind of things he's been saying behind closed doors with the GOP hit squad over at the Chamber of Commerce. You got to wonder. Because, you know, I think that just slipped out of his, it was one of those, I let the cat out of the bag.
And I think his handlers knew that. I think they told him to not to stay after that debate.
Which is why he bolted.
He bolted. I mean, he took his track shoes and he bolted. And I can tell you this, you know. And
I'm told he runs about a 4.74.
Well, I'm sure Joe Paterno would be glad to hear that. But we were talking off the air about the local talk show hosts tend to be conservative. They were putting that question out. Is it that money that they take off your check for unemployment a contribution, or is it a tax?
It's a contribution if I have a choice. I don't have a choice. It comes out of my check. Did I contribute to all the money that was handed out over in Afghanistan or Iraq? Was that a contribution? Did I contribute my part? Or hey, to some of the ridiculous programs that Republicans push, the $15 million that went to Harley? Did I have a choice in that?
Well, what they're doing here is circling the wagons, giving him cover. You know, putting doubt in the minds of the public when our auto campaign comes out and says, look, hey, see what I mean? He's violating his pledge. Well, what seems to have happened here, and you hit it on the nose. I mean, he's good at sound bites. He's good at talking points, but in the heat of the battle, which is what he was, which is, he's shown that he's not very good. That's why, Honorado has proposed 14. I don't know if they're going to have two more.
Two more,
and after his Corbett's performance in the first one, I'm sure he's not looking forward to the next two.
Look, I don't doubt that he doesn't show up for the last two. I mean, he doesn't have to. You got Republicans across the country who are saying,
but the race is tightening up, Rick. Can he afford to do that?
Sure, you can, because the electorate, evidently, the lights aren't on for some people. If you're looking at this and saying this is, it's not a tax. It's a contribution. If you're looking at that and saying, I can agree with that, the elevator's not going all the way up. The lights aren't on.
You got to remember, Rick, you got to remember the big numbers that the Republicans were getting, because in big numbers, the moderates who swung heavily for Obama were looking to vote for the Republicans. But if he does that and the numbers are tightening, I think he's going to turn off some key voters. Politically, I think it would be stupid.
Wow.
I'm not saying it won't happen.
That's why you're not running as
well. Campaign. I'm not saying it won't happen. If he does, I think he's taking a big chat. That's just me. We shall see.
The damage that would be done by another gaffe like that, or another honesty.
It's not a gaffe. He wants to be governor. Hello.
It's what he's going to do when he gets into office. That's just what it's going to be.
You can't handle the debate. I'm not so sure you're ready for the big time.
You can't handle the debate. Anyway, today the big news at the Capitol, State Senator Dave Argyle brought a blue dog to Harrisburg today.
Irv.
But it wasn't his opponent. They're saying U.S. Representative Tim Holden is the blue dog.
I knew that was coming.
You got to love the Patriot news. Argyle's Kerry Blue Terrier puppy, Wolfgang, sniffed and greeted a reporter and several Republican officials at the morning press conference in Harrisburg. Argyle said he's here to show people what a real blue dog is. Oh, that is so clever. Wow, that's clever. Evidently, they were having some kind of weird Fire Pelosi press conference. I'm trying to figure out how that equates to Argyle, the sock guy here, how the sock guy is going to beat Holden by running against Pelosi. I'm not quite sure about this. I'm missing the point.
Well, let me give you the point. The political axiom is if you have to force a local election or even a state election into a national referendum, it's usually because you don't have anything to say to the voter. And that's pretty much the case here.
But he didn't have anything from the beginning.
I haven't heard one commercial, by the way. Have you? Not one.
Well, he's not in my area, but...
Well, he is in mine. I haven't heard one. I really haven't. Well, I think, basically, to be honest, I think the Republican National Committee isn't giving him a lot of money, or he'd be on the airways every day.
I don't think so either. And you think he, you know, he's got name recognition. I mean, after all, there's a pair of socks named after him.
I mean, they think that they can take the House back, and they have their priorities, and I'm sure this is not one of them.
But here's the thing, and the reason I bring this up is you look at the fact that across the country we're seeing this whole Fire Pelosi movement, and that's our campaign slogan. Because as you point out, there's nothing else there. And there's this thought that we can drum up this anger. And, you know, anger is dominating the political conversation right now, especially if you're older, whiter, and economically anxious, you know? And if you didn't like Obama to begin with, and you tend to prefer Republicans over Democrats anyway. According to a new Newsweek poll, which I find interesting, there's little reason to believe that anger alone will be a determining factor this November. So this is what the poll says. Self-described angry voters fit a rather predictable political demographic file. The survey found that only 14% are Democrats. The rest are either Republicans or independents, or 52% being Republicans, with 42% of angry voters declaring themselves as Tea Party supporters. For the midterms, angry voters favor Republican candidates over Democrats, 73-19. Three-quarters of them want GOP to win control of Congress. More than 7 in 10 specifically describe themselves as angry with Obama and congressional Democrats, with a full 60%. Who see their vote in November as a vote against the president. This whole I'm as mad as hell, like I'm not going to take it anymore decision-making thing, though, this poll is saying is pretty much out the window. They claim self-described angry voters constitute only 23% of the electorate, and there's no reason to believe that they're any more likely to cast their ballot in November, which is kind of weird. You know, this is their poll, and I'm not going to question their poll so much, but it's kind of weird to me that the angry people wouldn't be more interested in going to the polls. And I guess the question is, you know, why? They're saying because the percentage of angry voters who say they will definitely vote in the midterms is statistically indistinguishable, 84% to 81% of likely voters. In fact, majorities of voters say they would not be more likely to vote for candidates who express anger at Washington incumbents, 60%. Wall Street bankers, 52%. Illegal immigration, 53%. Gulf of Mexico spill, 65%. Healthcare, 55%. So basically everything's people, the level-headed people, I think, are going to come out. And anger isn't the only factor here. And it's been overhyped. And this is kind of what I've been saying all along. What I've been saying all along is, look, folks, this whole feigned outrage is manufactured. It's a construct. It's something to sell stories. It's something to get people riled up. I really do think that come November, we're going to see people making informed decisions. When the candidates get out there and they make their case to the people, the people who've had their heads in the sand the last 6 months, because, hey, not everybody's me. Not everybody's you, Jake. They got lives.
Well, if you remember last week, the black woman who, I believe she was a 99er, I mean, she really, I haven't heard anybody talk to the president like that. I mean, she really went after him. And I just saw an interview the other day where a spokesman for the 99ers came on and said, well, you know, we kind of did some rethinking, and we are encouraging our people to come out to vote. I think that they're getting past. They're so frustrated and angry. Their first reaction was, well, I'm dropping out. I'm dropping out. And then upon reflection, I think they realize, well, that does, yep, that helps our enemies.
And
I mean, we got to be rational and adult about this. And now they're rethinking and saying, yep, look, we're going to come out. And although we're still angry and we're still very frustrated with the president. And I think the lady did the president a favor. I see him stepping up. I see him stepping up the emotion against his enemies. And finally, it's good to see.
When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the rest of the poll. It's good to see campaign Obama back. We're going to take a quick break. Your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
On December 28, 1970, President Richard Nixon signed the Occupational Safety and Health Act into law. Thanks to strong lobbying efforts by union leaders over many years, this safety bill of rights established for the first time a comprehensive national policy to protect workers' health and safety. Effective April 28, 1971, employers were required to provide a workplace free of known hazards that caused or were likely to cause serious physical injury or death. Prior to the passage of OSHA, work-related injuries and deaths were extremely high. The 1920s saw reports of 20,000 workers killed on the job and more than 2.5 million injured per year. That number remained until the 1960s when work-related deaths dropped to 14,000 per year, but injuries increased by 20%. Today, thanks to OSHA, protections on-the-job injuries have fallen 40% and on-the-job deaths have been reduced by 60% pre-OSHA. OSHA is considered the first piece of legislation allowing the government to inspect and hold employers accountable for dangerous and physically harmful working conditions. OSHA has three branches, an enforcement branch, a research branch, and a review branch. Since its passage, OSHA has allowed for greater visibility and oversight in conditions on the job, prioritizing efforts to prevent accidents, control health hazards, and ensure workers go home as safe and as healthy as when they arrived on the job. While OSHA is a step in the right direction, there is still considerable work to be done, and only through the eyes and voices of working people with the help of their unions will tomorrow be a safer day. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therichsmithshow.com.
Washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one? Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211. You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well. Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211. How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave? Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211. Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike. Call him at 243-3211. You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too. So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211. Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings. That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show. You can't tell me we're gonna make it somehow. I heard a wise man say
revolution starts now. I think it's time for I don't think it's the change that the Tea Party is going to want. I really don't. I don't see what the mainstream media is telling us. And again, I think it's a big construct. It's something for us to buy into, because if you look at some of the polls, and this Newsweek poll is one of them, they're saying on the issues, it appears that voters are trusting Democrats more than Republicans, pretty much on everything that faces the country. On Afghanistan, Democrats are up by 6 points. Healthcare, 12 points. Immigration, within the margin of error, 2 points. On Social Security, by 14%. People trust Democrats more than Republicans. Because look, Republicans want to privatize Social Security. We know that. We absolutely know that. And as much as they want to change the language, like Corbett in his, it's not a tax, just a contribution. Well, individual accounts, That's privatization. It doesn't get any simpler than that. Somebody's going to be handling that. Somebody's going to be skimming off the top. They're going to take the VIG right off the top. This is, you know, this scheme would make the mafia blush. And you got, you know, Pat Toomey, the Don there going, yeah, well, we'll fix you right up there, buddy. Fix you right up there, buddy. And we'll skim right off the top. On unemployment issues. And I can't believe it's only 12% because Republicans want to destroy unemployment. Again, another one of those things right from the beginning they were dead set against, and they're still against. Financial reform, well, gee, 14% for the up by the Democrats. Well, no kidding. It was the whole conservative movement, and I'm throwing Clinton in with that as well, who took the gloves off, said, you know what? Horses don't need reins. Let them run. And they did. They ran out of the barn, and we lost it. So it's no wonder. And on energy by 19%, education by 19%. When you look at this poll where people are going, yeah, I agree with the Democrats on education, on unemployment, financial reform, energy, Social Security, health care, you know, the war, all that stuff. I agree with the Democrats, but I'm going to vote against them. Exactly what sense does that make? Not an awful lot.
Well, the right-wing press has been spinning, and how many times have you heard, well, the majority of Americans are against it? And in the state, I mean, the Republicans make a big deal by saying that over 50% of the people in Pennsylvania are opposed to health care, with the inferences that they don't want Obamacare. When you look deeper into the numbers, as we said earlier in the week, when you look deeper into the numbers, 40% of those who opposed health care opposed it because it wasn't strong enough, and only 20% who didn't want the government involved. So when you look at the numbers in depth, even on health care, the Democrats come out favorably and by good numbers.
Yep. Let's go to our email bag. If you want to email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails personally, and we'll even read a couple of them here on the air. Russ writes, Rick, I heard your discussion on health care, and I cannot agree more. The system is broken and needs to be fixed. These insurance companies are greedy and deceitful. Good for you. For 20 years, I paid into a health insurance scheme. So if I got sick, I would be covered. My wife took ill last March, and the insurance fought us every step of the way. It was right then and there I decided we needed a change. I voted for Obama, hoping he would make insurance more affordable and accessible, but it looks like it's going to go the other way. Sure would be nice not to have to worry about losing my home if she gets sick again. Well, I'm glad to hear that she's doing all right, but you're right on. I mean, we should not have a system in this country to where your health could cost you everything that you've worked for your entire life. And as I've said before, and we've gone through this, if you don't have health security in this country, if you don't have the security to know that if you get sick, you're going to be taken care of, you cannot possibly be in the middle class. You cannot possibly, because if one illness makes you homeless, and I still remember the guy, Joe was his name, worked his entire life, had a heart attack, went to the doctor, went to the hospital, they fixed him up, he ended up losing his job because of the heart attack. Not because he wasn't a good worker, because he had a heart attack. So they let him go. And guess what happened? His health insurance went along with him. So now no job, no health insurance, bad heart condition, a whole bunch of other problems that went along with it. Now he's homeless. Everything that he had, and you'll remember this, Jake, mm-hmm. All of his possessions, he lost because he had nowhere to put them. He was homeless. He lost everything he had ever worked for.
And he was bright and he was talented.
Yep. He ended up sitting with us for a week when we did our food drive a couple of years ago. And, you know, oddly enough, conservative.
I was just going to say the irony is that he was a conservative Republican.
Served his country, worked his entire life, never asked for a handout. Now he can't find a job. He can't find a house. He's got tons of medical problems. Couldn't get Social Security disability because that takes a long time. Finally, through the help of several agencies in the Carlisle area, he was able to get a place with the Veterans Administration. And then he passed away 3 months later.
And those are stories you very rarely, usually never hear of.
And had I not met him, mm-hmm. I would have never known the story, and neither would you. And I remember the man having, even though he was in one of the worst situations I can imagine, he still had dignity and he still had self-respect. And, you know, look, I felt horrible that week when we left, when we packed up camp and left, because he sat with us the whole time. Because to be honest, the man was scared to death to be out and be homeless because, hey, it's a rough world out there. You got something in your pocket and somebody next to you wants it. In that world, they take it from you.
Well, I think something else, since you're sharing the story, Rick, we tend to think of, well, you know, they came from nothing. They were poor. They were perhaps lazy.
No.
If I remember, his family not only had some shekels, they were politically connected.
Yep.
They died. He lost that connection.
Yep. And, you know, here's the thing. For the week after, I couldn't just leave him. So I reached into my pocket, and I paid for a hotel for a week so he would have somewhere, because it was going to be miserable that next week. And, you know, I wish I could have done more. And this is why I say the individual cannot possibly do this alone. I couldn't reach into my pocket and help him enough.
It's just stopgap.
What has to happen is we, and I think we have as a society, we have said that we're not going to let these people fall through the gap. The problem is we've got folks up on the Hill who starve the beast. They cut funding to programs, and they dwindle away, and they die. And then people like Joe fall through the cracks and have very real suffering.
And when you talk about the conservative ideology, literally was up on the Hill several years ago. Me and another union brother, and we went up on the Hill to talk to people about, in the Senate, about health care. And the chief aide of a Pennsylvania senator actually told us, well, they think the churches should be that stopgap.
But they're not. And look, I would agree with them. I would absolutely agree. If I thought it would work, it hasn't. It has not.
You don't have the resources.
Not even that. It's not even that. What ends up happening in that scenario is you go, well, they're not one of us. We only help our kind. And I've seen it. You know, look, I grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland. And in our neighborhood, you had some of those people coming into the community. And, oh, well, you're not Catholic, or you're not Baptist, or you're not this, or you're not that, or... No, I want a boring, simple bureaucrat who says, you know what, this is what we're going to do. And then you know what? They do it with compassion and with caring, but everybody at the bottom gets the same treatment, the helping hand up. Look, that guy, you know, Joe just needed a place. He was collecting a Social Security check. He was going to collect a Social Security disability check. He was going to have some income. And for about 10 months, he was homeless. So think about this for a second. We spent hundreds of thousands of dollars keeping this man alive. Hundreds of thousands, from what he told me. He was in and out for procedure after procedure. He was going to the doctor homeless. And we were spending money on health care and then throwing him back out into the street like trash. That, my friends, is not a compassionate society. That, to me, does not make a Christian nation. Simple stuff. Another email I got, Joe writes, oddly enough, Joe writes, Rick, where do I get your Tea Party coloring book? Evidently, he liked our discussion on the coloring book that I suggested. We're going to work on it. I think we're going to try and find a couple people to draw us up some pictures, make our own Tea Party coloring book.
Oh, boy, I can't wait.
Well, I my wife said instead of the Cheney's shooting into a barrel, maybe have him just holding a big fish. That would be a better where Bush goes, I know that human beings and fish can coexist peacefully. I know it. I sure do. I know they can do it. And then in the next frame, you see Cheney holding the fish by a hook. That's coexisting in the Republican realm. Anyway. we got time for one more? Yeah, what the heck, one more. John writes, Rick, my wife has a mini med plan through one of the mega powerhouse corporations you named. If people only knew how bad these plans really are, they are low risk, high profit plans, just like you said. I told my wife to dump the plan and save the money. It's almost better to have nothing, owing nothing, so you can't lose nothing. So basically saying, we don't want to own anything, so we can't lose anything. Is that the American dream? I don't think so. Again, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. We're going to take a quick break. Right back, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Just make us be brave, make us play nice, let us be together tonight.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
What a wonderfully wacky campaign season we're having. And we haven't even gotten to the final couple of weeks when the goofy and kooky really rise to the surface. The Tea Party, of course, is the big news, defeating mere right-wingers in several Republican primaries to nominate a gaggle of quacks who are such far, far, far right extremists that they won't even ride in a car that has a left turn signal. For Goofy, check the TPGOP Senate candidate in Delaware, who says she has, quote, dabbled into witchcraft. Or their Nevada Senate contender who wants to eliminate jobless benefits because they, quote, really have spoiled our citizenry. Yeah, you can live the life of Riley on unemployment pay. Meanwhile, the Tea Party itself, fueled by the legitimate fury of thousands of outsiders, has unwittingly fallen under the political leadership of consummate corporate insiders and longtime GOP operatives. Few grassroots teabag enthusiasts realize, for example, that the chief funder of their raging anti-establishment rallies is the uber-establishmentarian David Koch. The 19th richest man in America, he's using the Tea Party crowd to advance his laissez-faire agenda of creating a corporate kleptocracy that'll stomp on people like them. Koch is 2010's Wizard of Oz, only Ozier. But the farthest out political wackiness is coming from where else? The Newt, trying to become the TPGOP's 2012 presidential choice, Newt Gingrich has loosened all the nuts and bolts from his sanity, freeing his inner lunatic to go wild and smearing Barack Obama. Appealing to the birther bunch, Newt is asserting that the president exhibits, quote, Kenyan anti-colonial behavior, and that Obama's long-dead African father is actually guiding his policies. This is Jim Hightower saying, I didn't think the GOP could get any goofier, but Newt's gone scary goofy.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publishers of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
We keep South Central Pennsylvania wired. We are the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 143, right here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And for 93 years, we have proudly provided our contractors and their customers with the highest skilled and best educated electricians in the industry. Whether it's wiring a light socket in a Habitat for Humanity's home or replacing a vital component on a nuclear reactor, our professional electricians do the job right the first time. Our members are the backbone of our community and our nation, working to make tomorrow a brighter day. If you want to join us, or if you need an electrician for your industrial or commercial project, call us at 717-232-7093 or visit our website at www.ibewlocal143.org. We are the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 143, and we keep South Central Pennsylvania wired.
Always by your side.
Official supporter of Palin Santorum 2012. The Rick Smith Show.
Christy, 60.
Well, you know, Christine O'Donnell back in the news.
No big surprise there. Ever since she's taken her her vow of abstinence to the mainstream media, you gotta love a candidate who says, "I'm not gonna do any interviews. I'm gonna do something, but I'm not gonna tell you what." But she did, before she went into her exile, she said that God wants her to filibuster.
She's just gonna ask you.
Again, and I'm going to ask my religious friends, you know, and I consider myself to be a Christian. We do attend the local religious establishment. Explain to me why, when someone like this claims that God is speaking to her, we don't send the people in the little white coats like we would if she were just standing on the street corner. I mean, there's a guy here in Harrisburg who stands on the street corner waving his Bible, screaming and carrying on. And, you know, people look at him like, oh, my God, what's wrong with that guy? You know, what they put in his coffee this morning? But Christine O'Donnell can say the dumbest things. Oh, I dabbled in witchcraft. And that was my, you know, that was just me being rebellious. No, that was you being crazy.
Well, there is a possibility, Rick. Maybe Delaware has their version of Mount Sinai with the burning bush, and she goes there whenever she wants God's advice. Anything's possible.
It's possible. Speaking of abstinence only, you know, and when I look at Christine O'Donnell, that's the first thing I think of.
What's that?
Abstinence only.
Abstinence only.
Because there's one person I hope never reproduces, because generally they reproduce crazy. I remember reading one of these Parade magazine articles where they were talking about fertility drugs, and this woman who couldn't have children ended up popping out like six of them. And they went to her friend, and her friend said, you know, she had six kids, you know, it's a little overwhelming, but God wouldn't give her any more than she could handle. And my first thought was, well, God didn't want her to have any, which is why she couldn't have any. It was only until you started, you know, mixing stuff up in a Petri dish and using a turkey baster that happened.
And playing God yourself.
Yeah. Anyway, new sex ed money's coming out, and they're ending abstinence only. For the first time in more than a decade, the federal government is funding sex education programs that aren't based solely on abstinence. And I say thank God, because now we're making, maybe we can start educating people. But they're not just handing out condoms either, reports the Associated Press. Beginning this school year, a five-year, $375 million grant is being divided between 28 programs that have been proven, you know, facts. I know how much the conservatives hate that. But they've been proven to lower pregnancy rates among participants, no matter their focus. Many programs distribute condoms, but about half of them aim to boost teens' academics, get them involved in extracurricular activities, and even improve their parents' job status. Advocates believe this above-the-waist approach gives kids the tools to help themselves succeed in school and make better life decisions, especially about sex. Bill Albert, the chief program officer of the National Campaign to Prevent Teen and Unplanned Pregnancy, said, quote, "There's a growing realization that we have to talk to young people about relationships. It's not just about body parts. It's saying, what are your goals, and helping young people understand what they need to do to get there." Wow, that's a novel concept. The article goes on to say that theory, which has become popular in the safe sex community in the past decade, will replace the abstinence-centered talks funded by the Republican Congress in the late 1990s and later under George W. Bush to the tune of $1.5 billion. Critics contend there's little proof these programs lowered teen pregnancy rates or that participants were less likely to have sex. In 2007, you'll remember Mathematica Policy Research, they came out with a study that said, hey, you know what? Abstinence only does absolutely nothing. Nothing at all. It doesn't stop people from having sex. It doesn't delay them from having or doing anything with the number of people. It does nothing. So even if the new policy doesn't work, we're still going to save over $1 billion because, look, we spent $1.5 billion and it did nothing. This way, we're only spending $375.
Well, there were some, to be fair, there were some high school groups that got together and promised each other that they would be abstinent until they got married. But you can do that without a government program.
Yeah. Okay. And I'm never gonna eat McDonald's again. Never, ever, ever. Anyway, let's go to the phone. We got Jim on line one. How are we doing today, Jim?
Hey, Rick. How you doing?
Fantastic.
Well, you know, this abstinence thing is sort of a failed policy, in my opinion. I mean, abstinence that may make the heart grow fonder, but it also does other things as well, which have, well, rather negative outcomes. And I think the government needs to take a more realistic approach to,
yep,
you know, to sex education and to the things that they're trying to accomplish here.
Yeah, I'm going to be really sexist here. I've got two daughters and one son, but my two daughters, I hope that they don't, nothing until they're 35 or I'm dead, whichever comes first. But you know, I mean, that's just my, you know, my, you know, fatherly instinct.
I understand your position.
But here's the thing. I do want my daughters to be educated. I want them to be able to protect themselves because in the real world, which I know they're going to live in, there are going to be numerous pressures on them, and they're the only ones who are going to be able to protect themselves. Not me, not their mother, and definitely not the predator that's going after them. I shouldn't say.
Well, you know, Rick, we live in a very dangerous world and have since 1979 when they began to realize what caused the AIDS epidemic.
You mean it wasn't monkeys?
You know, we're just not talking about unwanted pregnancies. We're talking about diseases that ultimately change lives forever and cause premature death. And, of course, you've got other elements like the Catholic Church that do not believe in any type of birth control, including condoms or whatever. The more, you know, it's a totally unrealistic policy.
I absolutely agree, especially when you look at a place like Africa, where you know the
And here is the thing, and I'm asking you a question, and this is not a rhetorical question.
Okay.
How can a bunch of old men in the Vatican who never had a family, who've never been married, and who supposedly are celibate, how can they dictate policy as far as sex education is concerned and what people should and should not do?
I agree. Which is why I'm no longer a Catholic. But I had a buddy who got married in the Catholic Church, and he had to go to the priest for counseling, and I asked him that very question. Exactly why are you going to a priest who knows nothing about the day-to-day life of a married person? I said, what you need to do is you need to find a guy who's like 90 years old, been married for like 60 of those years, and ask him how he did it.
Well, I don't know. I'll tell you, but you know, these people defend this policy with just relentless fervor.
But don't you think that has
entails such hypocrisy?
But don't you think that has to do with the fact that we're this whole puritanical mentality that we have, this control over women that our society seems to want to exert? That, you know, because honestly, even me, and I try to be as whatever word you want to use, liberal, progressive, open-minded, whatever. Even me, I look at my three kids, and I'm more protective of my daughters than I am my son.
Well, naturally, you would be. But look at how women have been viewed. I mean, you know, a lot of people in these very fundamentalist religions view women as being the descendants of Eve who led Adam to his fall in the Garden of Eden. And since then, women have been, you know, forced to take his second place in the world, which I think is, you know, just totally crazy.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, here's the thing, though, and I've often said this, and I've said it probably 1,000 times. I would love to be an evangelical Christian, one of these people who believes that women need to submit to me and do whatever I want to say. I think that would be a great lifestyle for me right now. The only difference is like I've said, I've got two daughters, and I couldn't imagine bringing two women into this world that would have to live that way.
Well, wasn't it one of the Beatles who said that women are the N-word of the world?
Yeah, that was John Lennon.
Yeah, really. And, you know, that to me is just, as a man, it's just totally so far removed from my think state that I can't imagine someone being that stupid and intolerant.
What I find funny is we look at the Taliban and say, oh, look what the Taliban makes them do. And we listen to some of these really far out wackadoos right here in our country. And I don't think they would balk if they could get away with it here.
I mean, you know, what kind of life do these women lead there? I mean, they're enshrouded in the burqa or whatever they call that thing they have to wear around their head, and they have no rights, and they can be beaten into a pulp by their husband, and it's just, I don't know, it's just totally so anti-humane.
Yep. Yeah, I agree with you.
I mean, the mistreatment of women, the attitudes of the Catholic Church toward birth control, and not only birth control, but self-protection.
Well, common sense.
And common sense, exactly. And there it is, and there you have it.
All righty, Jim. I appreciate the call. Thanks so much.
You have a good weekend. And when's your show on Sunday?
Saturdays and Sundays, noon to 2.
Noon to 2.
Yes, sir.
Okay, well.
Tomorrow we're going to be doing a taped show. We're going to be at the big march in Washington.
Now, what is it? I don't know anything about that.
A bunch of labor groups, a bunch of progressive groups have decided that, you know what, we want to bring people together. We want to talk about jobs. We want to talk about the economy. We want to talk about a progressive agenda that's going to work for working people. And I'm hoping there are going to be a couple hundred thousand people there, so that we can finally put to rest this nonsense that the Becks of the world and these hate mongers of the world are the only ones who are walking in the streets. That's what this is. It's really a show of people coming out in the streets and saying, this is what's really important. At least that's my take on it.
Well, I wish you all the very best of luck. I really do.
I appreciate it, Jim. Thanks so much. Have a great night. We're going to take a quick break right here, right back with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Some politicians say the unemployed won't look for work until their benefits run out.
Ed has been laid off from his pipe fitting job for over 18 months.
I'm here to tell you, being out of work is no fun. It sets you back in life. Benefits provide for less than half your wages. There's no health care, and your family suffers. To those politicians who think anybody would rather be collecting unemployment than working, I say come join us. We won't forget on Election Day.
This Labor Day message brought to you by the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO, Richard Bloomingdale President, Frank Snyder, Secretary Treasurer.
Hello, I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. A union of over 1.4 million strong and growing, AFSCME is gaining improvements in the workplace all across America. And right here in the Commonwealth, more than 95,000 AFSCME members make Pennsylvania happen. Highways, libraries, hospitals, parks, offices, prisons, classrooms, museums, courtrooms. You'll find AFSCME members at work in all these places and many more.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
Today's AFSCME members take on public service jobs as diverse as they are. Not for the recognition, but for a better Pennsylvania. For more information, please visit our website at AFSCME13.org. Labor is changing. So is your labor union. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happen!
Exposing that free trade is never free. The Rick Smith Show.
I got 800 miles of open border right outside my door. There's Minutemen in little pickup trucks who declared their own dang war. To build a barrier like old Berlin, 8 feet tall. But if Uncle Sam sends the illegals home, who's gonna build the wall? Who's gonna build your wall, boy? Who's gonna mow your lawn? Who's gonna cook your Mexican food when your Mexican maid is gone?
Yeah, your Mexican maid there, Miss Whitman.
Now, Rick, she didn't know.
$150 million to meet her maid once again. Very nice. I'll tell you who's built the wall, though. If you want to know who's built the wall, South Carolina Republican Jim DeMint, the senator from the good state there of South Carolina, he's pretty much the right-wing standard bearer. He's the guy who has pretty much said, you know what, I'm no longer working. I've decided that I don't have to work anymore. You're going to pay me, but I'm not doing anything else. Because he said all legislation will be on hold unless he approves it. So evidently we now have a king. We have a king who has decided that unless his view is his will be done, you know, everything stops. Everything stops. No more work in the Senate because this guy has the ability to put a secret hold on things and done. That's it.
Yeah, but
what happens if you went to work, Jake, and you said, you know what? I'm not going to do anything unless it meets my approval. How long do you think he'd be there?
I
say we fire DeMint.
There you go.
I say we get something moving. We get him. We show him the door. We're the Capitol Police when we need him. Put him on trial for theft. There's an idea. There's an idea.
I guess my question is, where are the people in his district? Where's the outrage?
Do we have the DeMint clip?
And what do you think will happen if that ensues?
Well, I had a group of businessmen tell me the other day, if you can just stop the tax increases on us and then have 2 years of gridlock, that would be the best thing that could happen for business, because at least we would know what to expect. Right now, they don't know what the government's going to do to them next. So this idea the government has to do something is not a good idea. So I think the less we do, the better, except maybe to dismantle some of the federal programs that are making it harder for America to be competitive. But we do need to stop these massive tax increases in January, and I don't know if we can do it in a lame duck. I don't think the Democrats are going to help us. So hopefully as soon as we swear in a new Congress, we can pass some legislation that will keep us from raising taxes during a recession.
And we can screw you, the working people. Yes! Mission accomplished banner. I mean, you heard him say that. We're going to go and we're going to get rid of all those programs. All gone. Bye. Unemployment. So long. And you know the weird thing about it is he's not the only one saying it. Pretty much that is the GOP line. When they take, and they think they're taking over. When they take over, gridlock, government stops. So here's what I'm saying. Maybe what we should do then is just send them all home with no paycheck. Say, if you're not going to do anything, sorry, we're not paying for it anymore. We'll agree that nothing is going to get done for the next 2 years. So save us all the rhetoric, save us all the news time, save us all the trouble, and, of course, the expense. And you go out on the unemployment line, and you stand there, and we can save our tax dollars. I think it's a pretty good idea. If they take over, just say, you know what, we're not going to work for 2 years. I mean, look, you got this right-wing congressman from Iowa, another Republican, Steve King, demanding a blood oath from John Boehner, a sworn sacred blood oath to repeal the health care, even if it means shutting down the government. You get the same thing from Lynn Westmoreland, Republican from Georgia, basically the same thing. And you got there a Sir Bling of Blang, Michael Off the Hook Steele. You know, he's pretty much saying the same thing. Well, you know, could happen, and it might be a good thing. Remember? Compassionate conservatives? Remember that? Where'd they go? They're probably with the fiscal cons, or the social cons, or the Ray cons, or the Neo cons, or the Coco cons, Chaka Khan. I'll tell you, the conservative movement has had more facelifts than Joan Rivers. And it's getting worse. Remember that little earthquake that happened over in Haiti? Remember that? Remember how we pledged? Another Republican pledge. We pledged nearly $1.2 billion in emergency aid to help them. Remember? Because we're a good Christian nation and we give all these countries money because we're just good Christians. Remember we were going to help the hungry and the homeless? We pledge! I pledge! Well, just like every other Republican pledge. Really not worth the paper that it's written on. According to the Associated Press, not 1 cent of the $1.15 billion the U.S. promised for rebuilding has arrived to the Haitians who badly need the aid. You may remember that. You may remember, both the House and the Senate passed a bill, $917 million, to make available for the Haitians to do some rebuilding. You know, help their people. You remember that? We were gonna help them because we're good, compassionate people. Well, what happened is Congress had to pass an authorization bill that lays out how the money will be spent. And guess what? Our friends in our Republicans in the Senate have failed again to do that. Why? The AP conducted an investigation asking that very question. Why? Why has the Senate failed to do their job again? And as it turns out, one single senator, one, pulled it for a further study. After doing a little research, the AP discovered that senator holding up the bill was Tom Coburn. Now, there has to be a good explanation, right? There's got to be a good explanation for holding up aid to hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people. There's got to be something there, right? You know, there's got to be something really egregious, something that, you know, just would turn your stomach, would, you know, send mom running for the hills, would curdle the milk, would spoil the apple pie. The spokeswoman for Coburn. She said the reason that they're holding up the bill is because he objects to the creation of a senior Haiti coordinator. Basically, what's going to happen is what they wanted to do is they wanted to hire a staff, somewhere up to 7 people, to oversee how the planning of the money was being spent. You know, to make sure that it was being spent on what it's supposed to. And it's $5 million. $1 million for 5 years to make sure that the money is spent properly. Sounds like a pretty good idea for me. Heaven forbid we should have some planning. Heaven forbid anyone but the mythical, magical hand, you know, the invisible man with the invisible hand who's been giving us the invisible finger all these years, someone other than him is going to do something. And you know what disgusts me? Only 2% of the rubble has been moved away. And there are some 13,000 temporary shelters that have been built, less than 10% of the number that needs to be done. There are 1.3 million Haitians homeless. And we wonder why the world looks at us with a jaundiced eye. We wonder why they look at us with disdain and hatred. This is the kind of stuff that the world goes, this is why we hate those people. They're a bunch of snobs. This is ridiculous to me, Jake. And this guy should be taken out to the woodshed. We'll go back. Let's go Republican on him.
Well, you're exactly right about Haiti. If you do any investigation, I mean, historically, I mean, there's corruption, there's graft. Every step of their system, the supply system, certainly, there's hands saying, you've got to give me, give me, give me. And to allocate $1 million a year to,
like the Republican Party,
to make sure that that $1 million plus is spent the right way, and we're getting maximum impact for our buck, I think is a sound investment. I don't understand his objection. I really don't. Maybe it went over my head, but I don't see what he's complaining about.
He's a scumbag. That's what it is. He doesn't care about anybody but himself. And, you know, anything to make this country look bad. These people hate this country. They hate everything that we do, and they'll tell you that. They want to change it to look like something that it has never been. This, who knows what, all they care about is taxes for rich people. Oh, I'm sorry, they're no longer, well, hold on. If we increase contributions from rich people, that's a tax. But if we increase taxes from poor people, that's a contribution. Okay, I'm starting to get the Republican lingo. And you can help me with this. Email me, Rick, at therickSmithShow.com, or give us a call here at the studio, 1-888-520-RICK, because I'm trying to figure it out.
Well, Tom Coburn, he's going to have to tell me how his actions prove that we're a Christian nation. I mean,
Well, we told them it was coming. We told them it was coming. That gave them hope.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. We're going to take a quick break right here. You're going to love this next story. Again, another company trying to stick it to their workers. We're right back after this.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith. It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg. You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Tens of thousands of people are marching in Washington, D.C. tomorrow in the One Nation March as workers and progressives fight for the changes working families desperately need. New York AFL-CIO Secretary Treasurer Terrence Melvin.
We will not step down. We will not step back. We will not retreat. Yeah. Victory is ours. Yeah. 10 to 10. 10 to 10. Will you join me? Will you join me? Will you make a difference?
In addition to the Washington March, the AFL-CIO says there will also be tens of thousands of union members going door-to-door October 2nd in 300 locations nationwide as part of a national political mobilization. This is the nation's largest grassroots political mobilization for the November 2nd elections. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka on why the Labor Federation is involved in the One Nation March.
It's time we lift our voices as one nation working together. People who are coming to Washington, D.C. to demand a renewed focus and investment in people. People like you who go to work every day and still don't seem to get ahead. People who want to work but don't have jobs to go to. One nation working together is demanding three things. 1 million new jobs, justice and equal protection under the law for all people, and world-class public education for all our children. We need Congress and other officials to hear us and then reinvest in people.
One U.S. Senate candidate doesn't know her state's minimum wage. Jesse Russell reports.
During a press conference where she accepted the endorsement of the National Federation of Independent Business, Connecticut's Republican senatorial candidate, Linda McMahon, couldn't remember the state's minimum wage. The minimum wage in Connecticut is $8.25 per hour, while the federal minimum wage is $7.25 per hour. The NFIB is against any increases to the federal minimum wage. McMahon said during the press conference that if she were elected, she wouldn't rule out possibly cutting the state's minimum wage. According to the Connecticut newspaper The Day, when McMahon was asked if she supported all of the organization's positions, her campaign abruptly shut down the press conference.
Workers who have lost their jobs and are in danger of having their homes foreclosed upon may receive some relief. J.P. Morgan Chase announced on Wednesday it would be halting upwards of 56,000 foreclosures because employees may have improperly filled out documents. The foreclosure suspensions will impact 23 states where foreclosures need to receive court approval. This announcement comes on the heels of an announcement last week by GMAC Mortgage that it would also suspend foreclosures and withdraw affidavits. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.com. Radio of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
You know, we're seeing a number of companies taking advantage of the economic downturn. They see that people are a little uncomfortable about the economic situation, and they see that they might be willing to, give back a whole bunch of those hard-fought gains that generations fought, bled, and died for, you know, like health care, pensions, decent living wage. You know, give that stuff back. The companies see, wow, there's a great opportunity. We can really go after public enemy number one, the people who work for us. And I look at this company, a St. Louis-based company, Express Scripts. They have realized $550 million in profit in the first half of this year. We're talking a year of major economic crisis, and they've profited $500 million. And apparently that's not enough. It's been reported that Express Script is threatening to close its suburban Philadelphia facility, dumping some 950 workers into the streets if the workers don't agree to huge pay cuts and they don't agree to give up their part of their health care, part of their retirement. Again, like I said, giving up those hard-fought gains. I got Bill Teeter on the line. He's a pharmacist over at Express Script Incorporated. Bill, well, thanks for taking time for me.
Thanks for having me on, Rick.
Is this right? Am I getting this the facts right? This is a company the first half of the year has made over $500 million.
That's right. They make over $3 million a day in profits.
And what are they, you know, I'm reading they want huge pay concessions. They want benefit cuts. How much of that is reported accurately?
It's accurate. They're asking for a wage cut and a wage freeze for 3 years. They want us to go into a self-funded health care that the coverage is totally substandard to anything that we have or been used to having, and we've been trying to work with them on other options to get health care that we feel is a standard type of plan that we could live with, but their plan is really substandard.
So let me ask you this, you know, because I talk to a lot of people who say, well, you know, maybe they're just really high paid workers. And I've talked to another guy here on the program and he's telling me you guys don't make an awful lot more than the industry average.
No, we're basically market wage. I mean, for the region, we're market wage. We have never, every time when we ever go to negotiations, we've always been, you know, we always say to them what the market average. We always use that as the basis. But, you know, we're not asking for anything unreasonable.
Right. So let me ask you this. The threat of closing the facility, is this a very real threat, or do you think this is something that they're just throwing out there as, you know, scare tactic?
Well, you have to take them seriously when they threaten to close, and we are taking them seriously. We offered them some concessions that, you know, let's face it, they're making over $3 million a day. I mean, we shouldn't have to offer them any concessions, but we're doing that to try and save our jobs.
So I guess the next question I have is it even legal? I mean, there's part of me that says it should be illegal to basically put a gun to your head and say, well, take what we're giving you, or we're going to up and pull stakes and leave.
Right. Well, you know, it's like they're holding our jobs hostage over our heads.
So what I give you guys credit for, you and your union, and I got to be honest, if you weren't a member of a union, we would never have heard anything about this. It would have just been imposed. There would be no newspaper reports. There would be no radio interviews. It would have just happened.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you know, if we didn't have the union support, and, you know, we've been getting other support from Congressman Patrick Murphy and the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO has been there to support us. And we're just trying to do everything we can to you know, we go in and we work hard for this company. We make a significant contribution to what they make. And, you know, we just want a little bit of back for what we do for them.
Oh, a fair share of the pie that you create, absolutely.
Right. I mean, I've been working for them for 10 years, and I've gone in there and always gave them an honest effort. And the whole facility has done that. We're one of the most productive facilities that they have. And as a matter of fact, they used to send everybody else's work to us when they were in trouble. So, I mean, I just don't understand their attitude towards us. It's just, like I said, I can't understand it.
Yeah, well, you're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Bill Teeter. He's a pharmacist at Express Script. They're having a contract, really a hostage situation, as I'm going to call it. But you guys aren't taking this laying down. Recently, you took a bus trip to go visit the CEO. Is that correct?
Yeah, we took a bus trip out to St. Louis just to
say
hello. Let them know that, you know, we're united and that we're willing to stand up for our jobs and do what we have to do to protect our jobs. I mean, they're just difficult people to deal with.
Right.
And they don't expect us to do anything but take what they're doing to us. And we're just trying to show them that we have to do what it takes to save our high-quality jobs and benefits.
Well, this is what's been going on across the country, Bill. You're not the only one who's going through this. I know that's of little comfort, but you're not the only one. There are a lot of companies across this country who see an opportunity with this economic downturn to jump in and really, really stick it to the workforce, because they know things are tough out there, and you're going to be less likely to stand up for yourself. Let me ask you this, because, you know, in looking at this company, there are a lot of points of pressure that could be bared. I actually know a couple of unions who get their prescription plans through Express Script. Are you working on, you know, kind of putting a little pressure on the you know, the businesses that Express Script works with?
Yeah, we've contacted unions and asked for their support, that, you know, and they've contacted us back. But it hasn't really gotten to that stage yet. And the thing is with this company, is Express Scripts, is they use us to get contracts. They go out and say, well, our largest facility is a union shop. And now they're trying to turn around and actually trying to break the union. So it's just a situation that, you know, you can't have it both ways. You
right.
can't use us to get your to build your business and then turn around and try and break the union.
Because I would think this would be a natural pressure point where you would go to unionized employers and you would go to the unions and say, hey, look, we can't have this. We can't have you holding a gun to unionized workers' heads, or any worker's head. I mean, this really is not just a union, non-union thing. This is a worker thing. And I think the more that people are getting the shaft here, the more we're going to have an opportunity to bring people together when we get through this.
Yeah, I believe that we would get a lot of support from the unions. But as I said, you know, it's not at a conclusion yet, and hopefully that they'll realize that, you know, all the union business that they have will be in jeopardy if they decide to close a union shop.
The website's americasmostwantedjobkillers.com. We're going to put a link over to our site at thericksmithshow.com. Last thought you have on this. We've had a couple of conversations with people. It seems to me that everyone right now is united. Is there a chance that you may end up on strike, walking out on the picket line, or is this something we're going to deal with inside?
Well, there's always a chance. Our contract's up December 15th. I mean, we can't rule that out. But, you know, we've been trying to work with them on this for months now. We've had a number of meetings. We still have a lot of meetings scheduled. So, I mean, the conclusion of this, I can't tell you how it's going to conclude, but, I mean, we're working towards the union has always offered them opportunities to look at other areas to be successful. They offered to give them work with them to get more union business, to build a business. That's our objective, to build the facility even to a better facility so
Absolutely.
They make even more money.
Yeah,
and just let us take care of our patients.
What's
That's
amazing.
All we're asking.
What's amazing.
Yeah, they have a $3 billion contract with the DOD, and, you know, and that's all American taxpayer money that they're getting. And they just refuse to acknowledge that kind of stuff.
And as I understand, they have the Medicare Plan D prescription plan that you guys administer. There's a whole bunch of stuff that I think we could be putting a bunch of pressure on them. Look, if come on.
Yeah, the union, you know, we're going to Washington on Tuesday to speak to some senators and congressmen.
Good.
They spend $400,000 in the last 3 months lobbying. So, I mean, we just want to get our message out there. We just want people to know the full story, because, you know, Express Scripts does not tell the full story.
Well, the full story is a very simple one. They're $500 million to the good this year. They made a very good profit last year. They're a very profitable company, and they see an opportunity to stick more coin in their pocket and stick it to their workforce. That seems pretty simple to me.
Yeah, but you know, they come out and say they have to stay competitive. But staying competitive, they're making $3 million, over $3 million a day. I mean, it's just not, you know, it just doesn't make sense. If you look at the whole story, it doesn't make sense that they're making over $3 million a day and say they have to remain competitive.
I'm curious what competitive means to them. If $3 million a day isn't enough, I wonder what the magic number would be, where they'd say, okay, now we're competitive enough. You know, 4, 5, 10 billion a day, what is it?
I can't answer that.
No, I mean,
George Pryde would have to answer that. I can't answer that question.
Well, the answer is it's never enough. It will never be enough. That's really the answer. You know, well, if we're making $4 million, we can always make five. That seems to be the corporate.
But I think it has to do a lot, like you said, about the situation with, you know, the economic situation. They're just using that as an excuse to, you know, try and break the union.
Well, it's an excellent opportunity because, you know, most of the people there, like you, have been there 10, 15, 20 years. They don't want to have to go out and look for another job to start over. And the fact that they've really put a gun to your head and threatened the fact that they want to move or they're going to move if you don't agree, to me, I think should be criminal. The fact that they come right out and say that, that's not even a veiled threat. That's an absolute in your face. We're going to quid pro quo.
I agree with you.
I mean,
I couldn't agree with you more.
It's angering and it's frustrating that we have labor laws in this country that allow businesses like this to get away with this stuff. Because, you know,
it has to stop somewhere. Hopefully, maybe we'll be able to stop it in our little area, and maybe it'll start all over the country.
And that's where I give credit to you guys standing up for yourselves, the Mott workers, so many other people around the country who have been resisting this move. This greedy move by corporations to steal back the gains that we've earned. Bill Teeter, I appreciate your time. Keep up the fight, and I'd love to talk to you again here in the very near future.
All right. Thanks again, Rick, for having me.
All righty. Thanks so much, Bill Teeter. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back afterwards.
It has to start somewhere. It has to start sometime. What better place than here? What better time than now?
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Some politicians say the unemployed won't look for work until their benefits run out.
Ed has been laid off from his pipe fitting job for over 18 months.
I'm here to tell you, being out of work is no fun. It sets you back in life. Benefits provide for less than half your wages. There's no health care, and your family suffers. To those politicians who think anybody would rather be collecting unemployment than working, I say come join us. We won't forget on Election Day.
This Labor Day message brought to you by the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO, Richard Bloomingdale President, Frank Snyder, Secretary Treasurer.
Where family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
Tomorrow there's the big rally in Washington at the Lincoln Memorial. If you can't get there, it's going to be on TV on Dish Network channel 94.15 and on DirecTV on channel 348. So you can watch the activity there and be part of it, because I think this is an important day, I think, because it's going to show the pundits, hey, there are people on the other side of the issue who are just as energized, just as active, and to be honest, just as angry, if you want to use that frame. Because as I've said, I'm pretty angry too. But I think I have a better grasp on where I want this country to go than your average teabagger. Because they can't seem to answer that question. Once we burn government down, who takes over? Can't seem to answer that. Anyway, some good news in the Carlisle area, I guess. The 48-acre shuttered former Maslin carpet plant appears to be poised for a rebirth, according to the Patriot News. Carlisle Events is rumored to be the buyer, and I knew this was coming. They wouldn't confirm the deal, but evidently this car show people, they're buying this place, and they're going to... they're going to have their car shows there. It's going to be kind of like the Barrett Jackson of this area, I guess. My question is, how much money will they be able to bilk out of the state? How much are they going to bilk out of this state? How much are they going to bilk out of the local community? Because the article says, well, you know, there might be a chance. Just might be a chance that you could use some of it for manufacturing. Might be some of it. depending on how much dollars I think we put up. So, you know, I wonder how much we're going to get pilfered for, with the hopes of maybe we're going to create a job or two. But, you know, this is what bothers me. This plant, it was Lear and then it was IAC, and this plant had hundreds of good paid workers. I think before they closed, I think they were making like $16 an hour, which for the area is a good wage. I mean, you're not gonna buy a yacht, and you're not gonna be able to, you know, cash in your stock dividends, but you'll be able to feed your kids and maybe every once in a while go see a movie and you know maybe bring your wife a flower so she'll, you know, maybe look at you once in a while. But, you know, no great living. And what we've done is we've moved that manufacturing on. It's gone somewhere else. And now we're going to have a store. And you look across the state, you look across the country, honestly, you know, in Bethlehem, one of the largest steel mills in the country. What is it now? It's a casino. You look at the in Reading there, they got the outlet malls. That used to be a place where they produced clothing. Now it's just a place where they sell cheap clothing made in Vietnam and China. And this goes back to our trade policies. Places that used to manufacture stuff, now is just a place where we buy stuff. And Barry Ritzholt wrote an interesting piece that I came across. It's the left-right paradigm. He says the left-right paradigm is over. It's you versus the corporation. And I think he's spot on. No more, as he points out, is it left-right. It's no longer liberal-conservative. It's no longer pro-life versus pro-choice, tax cuts versus more spending. It's no longer any of that pro-war, peace-nicks, whatever you want to say, union, non-union. It's not that anymore. The reality is, and now look, we've been divided into all of this stuff. The wealth class has divided us into this. You know, the gay marriage people versus the family value people. You know, the school choice people versus the public schools. Regulation, free market. You know, they've really done a nice job of putting us into categories, and we've allowed ourselves to do that. And as this guy points out, the reality, the big picture, is that it's you, Jake, against ExxonMobil. Or BP, or Halliburton, or any of these huge multi-state, multinational corporations who have unlimited funds. And as you look at the fact that Citizens United got passed, and I'm telling you, this privacy case that's in front of the Supreme Court is going to go the way of the corporation. Mark my words. But as this guy points out, consider a couple of the bullet points he points out. He says many of the regulations that govern energy and banking were written by corporations. And that's exactly the truth. And we wonder why the banking industry was so profitable and we had to bail them out. I mean, all we did is we gave them a bunch of money. They made tons of money, loaded their pockets. Oh, we're rich. And then they collapsed and we gave them a bunch more money. I mean, if you're the corporation, that's a win-win, I think, right?
Absolutely.
Same thing in the energy sector. Look at Enron. We took the regulations off. What'd they do to us? They turned out the lights. And then they joked about screwing us. They joked about jacking the rates up because, oh, we're creating a shortage. But the corporation's going to act in their best interest. He goes on to say the biggest influence on legislative votes is often corporate lobbying. And you look at this pledge. You look at the grand pledge. The pledge. Republicans, I pledge to the Republican Party. Written by a lobbyist. I mean, come on. How much worse does it have to get? And this is where I say, at some point, Jake, we've got to put aside our petty differences, like over nonsense like gay marriage or abortion, all the little things. Get rid of that stuff. Just, you know, put it in the back burner. When everybody's got a job and we don't have children starving, I mean, if you're really anti-abortion, maybe policies that help feed kids so they don't die of starvation, maybe that's a good idea, I think. You?
No.
No? Okay, well, screw them! Let them die in the street. Okay, I got it.
Well, I mean, we joked about it, but think about it. The two big talking points for the Republicans, lower taxes, less regulation. Less regulation for big business to do what they want. Laissez-faire, which is basically what the banks had and almost brought this country down. Less taxes ultimately means cutbacks, sometimes to the point where, well, you got to privatize. And who benefits when you privatize? The corporate interests. So it's a win-win for them. And then you wonder, is there any wonder why there's money behind these candidates?
Yep.
Because it furthers their agenda. This is not rocket science. Now, that doesn't mean that they're going to be easy to beat, because they're not. They're entrenched and they're powerful. And until we awaken, like some of the Tea Party people have said publicly, it sounds like a good talking point. You have awoken a sleeping giant. And that happened at the rally I was at. The town hall meeting, I was there when she said that. Now, if only that were true, if only we had awakened a sleeping giant in the American people and they rose up and threw these clowns out, it would be a much better nation. But I believe her, what she was saying is, oh, we're gonna take back our party. We're going to take back our country.
The crazy people are
awake. We're going to put the staunch conservatives in. Well, honey, I hate to tell you this. They are not representing your interest.
Just what we need. Just what we need. Another point he brings up, corporate ability to extend copyright far beyond the original protection amounts to a taking of public works for private corporate usage. Again, you know, when you get to write the rules and you have your congressman, these guys pass it, there's a problem. And look, I'm as angry as anyone about what goes on in Washington and here in Harrisburg, because I do see we are just not being represented. We're not. You and I, our interests are not. We don't have lobbyists. Now, when I was a member of a labor union, I had a lobbyist who at least looked out for my job. He was at least out there fighting to keep the borders closed from cross-border trucking, which is a failure. If Mexican trucks roll into this country, the trucking industry is dead. And that's just the beginning. No longer, you know, we don't have any more jobs to outsource. We've lost most of those. All the jobs that are going to go are probably almost gone. Now what they need to do is they need to bring workers in to take the jobs that are here that can't be outsourced, like driving a truck, like helping people in their homes. And this guy's right. It is about you against the corporation. And I know. Rick, you're talking about class warfare. And I ask the question, why is it class warfare when I decide to start fighting back? It wasn't class warfare when they did all these things. It was just business doing business. Well, you know what? I think we need to do some business of our own, folks. He goes on to say, PAC and campaign finances by corporations have supplanted individual donations to elections. Look, I'm a big fan of publicly financed election. I'm a big fan of the guy who gets the most $10 donations gets matching money from the federal government. I'm a fan of that. I think we need to look at how we fund these elections. And you look at the story of John Boehner. Boehner, right?
Just call him a tan man.
Tan man. That guy makes me laugh. I got to be honest. He calls a bunch of Republicans into a room, says, I need to raise $4 million. I need some pledges. Within 35 minutes, the RNC got $4 million, including Boehner's check for $1 million. And how did he do it? Stationed somebody at the door and said, nobody gets out of here until I get the money. And the Republicans he shook down, but you'll never hear it from them. Joe Barton, the apologist, Kevin McCarthy, you know, the young gun, a guy named Hal Rogers, Tom Price, Paul Ryan, another young gun, Doc Hastings, another Republican, Robert Edholt, Jeb Hensling, Buck McKeon, Candace Miller, Stephen Lortoret of Ohio, great, Mario Diaz, and Aaron Schock. They're the ones who ponied up the money. And he planted someone at the door and said, you know what? Give me some money. We got to get the money out of this. Who can raise the most money should not be how we decide our elections. What corporation decides that they're going to pump unlimited funds into an attack ad campaign should not be how we decide elections. We should be talking about how do we create an economy that works for all of us. I don't want to do away with rich people. I think rich people are needed in a society. But I don't want them to be so wealthy that they can crush the rest of us. I want us all to prosper. So when I hear, well, Rick, you just don't like rich people. No, I love rich people. I got a couple of relatives who are rich people. Decent people. Put their pants on the same way I do. Their pants are worth more than mine, but same idea.
Worth more than those jeans? That's hard to imagine.
Well, you know, I did work on putting holes in them, so I could probably sell them for a premium.
If I can comment on something you said, that sometimes people think, oh, you're always battering the Republicans. The truth is, it's not a matter of Republican and Democrat.
Nope.
It's the money, and you saw the corrosive influence of money, the anti-democratic corrosive influence of money during the healthcare debate. Key Democrats were bought and sold, Max Baucus being Exhibit A.
The Nelson twins, you know, the Walmart senators. I mean, come on, the list goes on. Trader Joe Lieberman. Again, it's not that I'm lockstep with the Democratic Party. It's just that right now, Democrats are our best hope. Because the Republicans, when they take control, you're going to see pain. Like Pat Toomey said, if he were in charge, it would have been a much harder down. Get ready for the harder down. We're going to take a quick break. Your call is 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Right back.
Smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
Old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
On December 28, 1970, President Richard Nixon signed the Occupational Safety and Health Act into law. Thanks to strong lobbying efforts by union leaders over many years, this safety bill of rights established for the first time a comprehensive national policy to protect workers' health and safety. Effective April 28, 1971, employers were required to provide a workplace free of known hazards that caused or were likely to cause serious physical injury or death. Prior to the passage of OSHA, work-related injuries and deaths were extremely high. The 1920s saw reports of 20,000 workers killed on the job and more than 2.5 million injured per year. That number remained until the 1960s when work-related deaths dropped to 14,000 per year, but injuries increased by 20%. Today, thanks to OSHA, protections on-the-job injuries have fallen 40% and on-the-job deaths have been reduced by 60% pre-OSHA. OSHA is considered the first piece of legislation allowing the government to inspect and hold employers accountable for dangerous and physically harmful working conditions. OSHA has three branches, an enforcement branch, a research branch, and a review branch. Since its passage, OSHA has allowed for greater visibility and oversight in conditions on the job, prioritizing efforts to prevent accidents, control health hazards, and ensure workers go home as safe and as healthy as when they arrived on the job. While OSHA is a step in the right direction, there is still considerable work to be done, and only through the eyes and voices of working people with the help of their unions will tomorrow be a safer day. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center. Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therichsmithshow.com.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Gotta love those fancy cookies. There's a cookie craze going through the studio here, folks.
Cookie.
Yeah, well, you know, you gotta have your cookies. And speaking of the Tea Party, Mary Bloomberg, who, oddly enough, may become Treasury Secretary from some of the rumors I'm hearing. But Mayor Bloomberg on his radio show, hosted with John Grambling, talked about the Tea Party. He said, "Wake up! The wake-up call, John, is called the Tea Party. That's what the Tea Party is. It's funny. It's not a political movement. They're not pro-choice or pro-life. They're not pro-gun or anti-gun. They're not pro-gay rights or anti-gay rights. They're not with any of the social issues. They're a group of people who you see every 8-10 years. There was a Perot boomlet, if you remember, and there was the McCain boomlet 8 to 10 years ago. And it's, I'm sick of it. That's what people are saying. I don't know what the answer is. Your job is to figure it out, Mr. Congressman, Mr. Senator, Ms. President, whatever it is. I'm just going to tell you I'm annoyed, and I'm not going to do it. I don't want to take this anymore. And I agree with Bloomberg on this. I don't think it's a movement. I think it's people who are just ticked off. And I've said that 1,000 times. But now we need someone like Mike Bloomberg to solidify it. Now we can all agree, right?
I feel better, don't you?
I do. I feel so much better. That
this coming from a billionaire.
Another guy
has
who
the insight into the suffering of the working class. I say facetiously.
Yeah, well, you know, again, as I've said a number of times, look, this is not a movement. This is not the Republican. You know, we keep trying to say, well, they're the Republicans. And most of them are. They're angry white people who have been sold a bill of goods throughout their working lives that the 401k that they had was going to be there when they retired. And it's not. Anyway, let's go back to the email bag. Again, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com, or just go to thericksmithshow.com and click on contact. I do answer all emails. And I do appreciate it. Alan writes, Rick, I stumbled across your show last night and listened most of the night. The story on home foreclosures, interesting. Because when I listen to other shows, they blame the people losing their homes. I don't agree with that. I heard someone say that they were glad they were renters so they wouldn't lose their home. Sounds kind of bizarre, but I can see the logic. Keep talking about the real issues. Alan, and look, you know, what's going on in this country is it's another blame the victim scenario. The people who've lost their home, somehow they were stupid or lazy or they unworthy. And it was the Community Redevelopment Act. When in actuality, the CRA actually had a better repayment rate than the industry as a whole. But again, don't let the facts get in your way. This is an economic problem. And this is what happens when you have a nation built, really a globe built on debt, Jake. You got something?
Well, you had talked about retirements and the debt. Right now, Rick, I think it actually might be a conservative figure, about $6.6 trillion as far as retirement deficit. When you talk about retirement deficit, you're talking about 401ks, you're talking about pensions, you're talking about Social Security, other forms of savings and housing. And then you look at Social Security, it's under attack. What we have to do is make sure that we don't allow those politicians who are going after Social Security to be successful, to cut the benefits. The truth is there are many people that there's many people that don't, not only don't they have a 401k or a pension. I mean, they, all they have is Social Security and that's it. And if we cut back on that, I mean, we are going to have an underclass when those people retire. So that number of 6.6 trillion is probably right now conservative. The point being, look, we have a deficit as far as national spending. We have a trade deficit, but we also have a retirement deficit. And that is a crisis just looming over the horizon.
Back to our email list. Keith writes, Rick, I don't know why the government has its nose in inspecting pools and spas at private establishments. I'm glad the government is out of the way. They have no business interfering. If there is a problem with the pool, it is best worked out between the pool owner and the customer. Get government out of the way and let us live our lives. That would be great, Keith, if it were that simple. And I go back to the girl I dated in high school whose father took ill because the pool owner was irresponsible. Are you ever going to be able to fix what happened to him? No. And in fact, he got very little out of it in the end because eventually the place went belly up, filed chapter 13, if I remember, and that was it. Game over. And you look at this story that was in the Patriot today. Matt Miller writes, the state attorney general's office has filed a lawsuit in Dauphin County Court against a Harrisburg home improvement contractor who is serving a prison term for defrauding customers. The suit seeks damages for the victims in Cumberland and Dauphin counties, plus fines against Fred Fink, 43, of this company, whatever. Fink is accused of lying on his state contractor registration form by not disclosing past criminal convictions. Also, the suit states that he didn't give clients proper contracts and took down payments exceeding that allowed by law for work he performed shoddily or did not do at all. Now, let's stop and think about this for a second. We passed a law that said contractors had to register. They had to, you know, become certified and people could call and find out about them. But we didn't bother to give them the resources that they needed to check every application. So the guy went, he lied on his application. Okay. A bunch of people who lie on state forms. The problem is you got to have somebody who's checking them. So nobody checked it out because they just don't have the resources. And as I'm seeing this, when the law was passed, there was very limited money into enforcement. Had we invested that little bit of money to actually do the checks up front, this guy, maybe we could have saved some people a bunch of money. Because the people who got cheated, they're never getting their money back. They're never going to see that money. And this is one of the things, Jake, that government does. If funded properly, if we have proper oversight, these are the kind of things that they're supposed to do. But again, you know, this whole no tax pledge. So what happens? You know, this is an easy agency to cut. Well, you know, we don't have the money. We'll just keep stacking up the applications. We'll just keep stacking them up.
Well, think about it, Rick. How many people even knew that existed? This is just another thing of the many that go under the radar when you talk about less government and we don't need government. People really, really, really don't understand. The truth is, whether you like it or not, government and its regulations and the laws that they pass literally govern our lives from the time we wake up until the time we go to sleep. We just don't realize it. We're talking about food. Think about your car, safety regulations, your workplace. Almost every facet of your life is governed by to some degree by lawmakers passing laws and by regulations. People just don't realize it. I mean, when you advocate less government and no government, do these people really understand? I don't think they do. Now, the argument could be, well, maybe we should streamline it, and maybe perhaps there are some pieces of government that could be streamlined, but they don't really want to do that. They don't want to make it more effective. They just don't want I'm talking about the true believers. They really believe, or at least the money and interest don't want it there, but there are some people who are just working class people who believe that we're better off.
Well, you go back
basically
to someone like Corbett.
Minimum government.
You go back to someone like Corbett. When asked, what would he cut? Couldn't name a single thing. You go to many of these politicians who spew this line. We need to cut. Well, what do you want to cut? Well, there are thousands of government programs. Name one, just one.
Well,
and I look at this one, and this is one of those where you go, okay, we don't need someone to get between a contractor and a customer. Okay, well, that's a fair argument. The customer and the contractor, you know, maybe there's the Better Business Bureau, who knows? But the way contractors change names, good luck keeping up with that. So the state said we need to do something. And there's an argument for keeping people out of it. So when you have situations where this guy here said he was going to do something, didn't do it, cheated people out of a bunch of money, he goes to jail. So not only did the people get cheated, but we, the taxpayers, have to pay for him to go to jail. For us, the taxpayers, the people who have stake in this country, it's a lose-lose proposition.
Is it possible, just for a second, being a devil's advocate, is it possible that somehow he fell through the... Somebody screwed up, one individual. Could it be that the system does work, or is it a system where you just don't have enough oversight?
You just don't have enough oversight. That's my take on it.
Okay.
Let's take a quick break. We're back to wrap this up. You're gonna love this. If you like kid stories, stick around for this one. A really, really touching kid story. We're right back after this.
Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
What a wonderfully wacky campaign season we're having. And we haven't even gotten to the final couple of weeks when the goofy and kooky really rise to the surface. The Tea Party, of course, is the big news, defeating mere right-wingers in several Republican primaries to nominate a gaggle of quacks who are such far, far, far right extremists that they won't even ride in a car that has a left turn signal. For Goofy, check the TPDOP Senate candidate in Delaware, who says she has, quote, dabbled into witchcraft. Or their Nevada Senate contender who wants to eliminate jobless benefits because they, quote, really have spoiled our citizenry. Yeah, you can live the life of Riley on unemployment pay. Meanwhile, the Tea Party itself, fueled by the legitimate fury of thousands of outsiders, has unwittingly fallen under the political leadership of consummate corporate insiders and longtime GOP operatives. Few grassroots teabag enthusiasts realize, for example, that the chief funder of aging establishment rallies is the uber-establishmentarian David Koch. The 19th richest man in America, he's using the Tea Party crowd to advance his laissez-faire of creating a corporate kleptocracy that'll stomp on people like them. Koch is 2010's Wizard of Oz, only Ozier. But the far-out political wackiness is coming from, where else, the Newt. Trying to become the TPGOP's 2012 presidential choice, Newt Gingrich has loosened all the nuts and bolts from his sanity, freeing his inner lunatic to go wild and smearing Barack Obama. Appealing to the birther bunch, Newt is asserting that the president exhibits, quote, Indian anti-colonial behavior, and that Obama's long-dead African father is actually guiding his policy. They are saying, I didn't think the GOP could get any goofier, but Newt's gone scary goofy.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publishers of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current. Even a dead fish can go with the flow. Now available wherever books are sold.
Radio of, for, and by We the Working People. The Rick Smith Show.
Oh, yes, the hammer has fallen. The family values. Here's a good family values story. A Western Pennsylvania father will spend 6 months to 2 years in jail after pleading guilty to hiding his marijuana stash in his son's Elmo backpack, which the boy then took to school with the drugs still in it. That's right. The Ronald Washington drug cartel has been broken up. The 33-year-old Ronald Washington of Uniontown pleaded guilty to endangering the welfare of children and marijuana possession charges Thursday. A Fayette County judge will sentence Washington next week to time specified in the plea agreement. which evidently is 6 months to 2 years. Police say Washington called the school where his son attended kindergarten back in April, told officials he needed to get something from the Sesame Street-themed backpack. That prompted school officials to search the bag and call police, and where they found 3 ounces of pot. So now let's think about this for a second. The good, you know, we're going to be paying about somewhere between $40,000 and $100,000 because this guy is stupid. 3 ounces of pot does not make a cartel. And he's going to spend at least 6 months to 2 years because he's stupid. And this is one of those instances where you go, are we brain dead? Here's a guy probably had a job, was supporting his family, you know, had a little pot thing going on.
And he was smoking at home. Who cares?
The dumb thing is you don't put it in the kid's backpack.
No,
huh?
That was stupid.
Don't know what you were thinking there. You know, if the judge was any kind of a decent judge, he'd say, come here, walk up to the bench. And he'd slap him upside the head. Don't do it again. And he would send him home. That's what should happen. And we need to go back to that. You know, sometimes somebody just needs a good slap upside the head to be a good citizen. And I'm in favor of that. But, you know, 6 months to 2 years in jail because the guy's stupid, I'm sorry. I'm not with you on that. Not at all. But, again, you want to save tax dollars? That's a good place to start.
A nice, reasonably priced fine.
Because you look at
let him know and let him go.
You look at this story that's coming out of Lemoyne. They're having a big meeting. There's a big meeting coming up, and it's October 5th for our public service portion of the program, 7 p.m. at the Borough Hall, 510 Herman Avenue. They're talking about a plan to make improvements to their sewer treatment plant, $14 million. And it's going to increase their rates considerably. And I look at the fact that we need this money to invest in, like, this one community in their water treatment center, yet we're taking $40,000 to $100,000 because somebody's stupid. To me, that seems like a really big misappropriation of funds. And at a time where we're talking about no tax pledges, where's the revenue going to come from? You know, I think about this guy that I drove by whose car was broken down in the middle of this foot and a half deep water because he went driving right on past the cones, right into the water. Got stuck. Car stopped. He said he called the police. I said, you got help coming? He goes, well, I called the police and they're not coming. And, you know, it made me start to think about some of the other stupid things people do. You know, like people who go for a walk and get lost in the woods and then they got to send out the search party. That money comes out of taxpayer dollars. You know, the idiot who wants to fly around the world with a couple of balloons. When he crashes, somebody has to go find him. So I wonder if we're gonna start charging for stupidity, if there'll be like a stupidity fee. I often wonder about that. Anyway, tomorrow is the big rally. And Jake wants me to remind everybody that you can watch it on DirecTV on channel 348 or Dish Network on 94.15. It is the 10-2-10 march. One nation marching together.
11 to 5, by the way.
There you go.
All day.
And you can watch a whole bunch of fiery speeches and happy stuff. Also, I don't want you to miss this because Monday we're going to be talking about it. 9 o'clock Sunday night on CBS. You got to watch Propaganda Undercover Boss. You got to watch it because we're going to be talking about it here. The CEO of the Great Wolf Lodge, a company right here in Pennsylvania. Woohoo! They run a chain of indoor water parks, which has its biggest facility, I guess, right here in Scott Run, Monroe County, up the road a bit, 78,000 square feet. It's a nice indoor water park, great place. We're probably thinking about taking the kids there for Christmas, you know, one of our Christmas presents, probably thinking about it. But Kim Schaefer, she's going to go undercover and experience firsthand what Great Wolf Lodge employees go through every day. It'll be filmed at several of the Great Wolf locations, around the country. The episode follows Kim as she participates in various frontline jobs, including restaurant server and aquatic supervisor. The Wisconsin-based Great Wolf has indoor water parks in 12 locations, Scott Run, Williamsburg, and Sandusky, Ohio, probably right near Cedar Point there. Schaefer says she signed up for the exhausting undercover journey in order to get an up-close look at the resorts and to find out where Great Wolf is excelling as a company and where they're not. And let's not forget the free one-hour infomercial and free advertising that come along with undercover propaganda boss. During the episode, Schaefer will be a cub club guide. That means she's going to be stuck around a whole bunch of children. I'm sure our producer Brett would love that job. She'll be working at the front desk, checking people in. She'll be serving food at restaurants, at the restaurant, and acting as an aquatic supervisor, keeping the guests safe in the fast-paced environment water park. I wonder if she's certified as a lifeguard. I wonder if there's any insurance liability. I hope nobody dies while they're filming this, because they've got some nitwit who's not certified. Because if she's anything like all of the other CEOs who have gone to undercover boss, she will be completely inept and have like six thumbs. So I hope the people who end up getting the food that she serves, I hope they're not picky like I am. Because you know she'd probably bring me some half-done thing, which would be not good. So anyway, 9 o'clock Sunday night, Undercover Propaganda Boss. I love this show.
I just can't wait. I mean, I don't know if I can hold myself back.
Don't worry, I'll do it for you.
Okay.
But anyway, that's the deal. What I love about this is, you know, like the last one, the guy said, "Well, you know, I didn't know, how good my employees really were." The AP reported Maine Republican gubernatorial candidate Paul LePage told a group of fishermen at a GOP forum that he won't be afraid to tell Barack Obama to go straight to. I don't know if I can say that.
The place,
H-E double hockey stick.
The place down below.
Yeah. LePage said it to the fishery forum in Brookville during a discussion on federal regulations that Maine fishermen are not happy with. It was caught on tape, and he says, "As your governor, you're going to be seeing a lot of me on the front pages saying, 'Governor LePage tells Obama to go straight to you know where.'"
To a round of applause, by the way, I saw that.
Yeah, of course. LePage tells the Associated Press he regrets his choice of word, but he stands behind his intent. He says the administration's spending is driving up the national debt and taking us to a place where my children and my grandchildren never come back from. And again, I ask, where were you during the Bush years? You know, where was all this feigned outrage back then? Saxby Chambliss has fired his staff member who wrote the anti-gay slur on the gay rights blog, Joe My God. Chambliss personally called the blogger, Joe Jervis, to apologize this week, saying that the words, all gay people must die, comment was simply unacceptable and that he will not tolerate such a thing for my staff. Jervis accepted the apology, and now we can move on with our lives. Senate candidate Joe Miller issued a victory tweet Wednesday, saying that he should, quote, do some hunting and pick up some office furniture during a trip to Washington. While his campaign has removed the tweets and said they were, quote, the work of a volunteer, Senator Murkowski has issued a new ad saying Miller should wait to hear from the 88% of us back in Alaska who didn't vote for you. And again, that's the message. Same thing with Christine O'Donnell. What about the 95% of the people who didn't vote for her?
Well, the truth is, in Alaska, I mean, he has a very good chance of winning, Rick. Her? I think she's going to lose.
I hope so. I hope she wins. She's the one I want to see win. Anyway, tomorrow, if you can't make it to Washington, to the Lincoln Memorial, you can watch it on TV. Most people like watching people live their lives on TV. Why not watch this too? Dish Network 9415 or DirecTV 3348. So, it's another reality show. Since you got a lot of people who seem to like to watch people on TV. Again, this has been a great week. I appreciate all of our guests and all our callers, and especially you. Thanks for listening. We will see you back here on Monday, every night, 9 to midnight. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this is...